like to call the meeting to order at 6 o'clock p.m. right on the nose, just as I like it, and how we'll be doing it for the rest of the year. We'll start the meeting by acknowledging, we would like to respectfully acknowledge the University and our students here are located on the T6 territory. We are grateful to be on Cree, Dene, Saulteaux, Métis, Blackfoot, and Nakota Sioux territory, specifically the ancestral space of Papa Chase Cree. These nations are our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Alberta Students Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work towards the decolonization of Indigenous knowledges and traditions. We'll start with item number one, which is speaker's business, which I have a limited amount today, but we'll start with our favorite one, which is attendance. I'll just open it up here. And President Bettinger.
Present.
Vice President Agarwal.
Here.
Vice President Brown.
Happy to be here.
Vice President Statt.
Here.
Vice President Larson.
Here.
Governor Lee.
Here.
Councillor McKenzie.
Just trying to connect on the live stream.
Okay. 1 minute, let me look. Okay, I do not have her yet.
Yeah, she's having some problems.
Okay. Councillor Ragasawa, we just here. Talked. Councillor Beasley?
Here.
Councillor Chen?
Here.
Councillor Dixon?
Here.
Councillor Draper?
Let's finesse this with Katja.
Councillor Isaac?
Here.
Councillor Ismail?
Yeah.
Councillor Marianakis?
Present.
Councillor Kidd?
Here.
Councillor Z?
Here.
Councillor Ottawan? Councillor Ottawan? Councillor Bose?
Here.
Councillor Sunday?
Here.
Councillor Nugent?
Here.
Councillor Hadouche?
Here.
Councillor Badesha?
Yeah.
Badesha. I got it right.
That was good, yeah.
Councillor Dillon?
Here.
Councillor Katara?
Here.
Councillor Jamal Dean?
Here.
Councillor McVeigh? Councillor McVeigh? Councillor Syed?
Here.
And I am here, and the general manager is not. And that concludes attendance. So going into the rest of my speaker's business today, very short, I'd just like to remind everybody that to register for GovCamp if you haven't already, because that's coming out very quickly. I'd also just like to give a quick shout out to Vice President Statt for getting the paper copies of the agendas and late editions printed and stapling each and every one by hand because they were done ahead of time. But he came out on top of it. And I'd also just like to put a bug in, as speakers did, put a bug in CAC here. I realize that this year's CAC has a lot of business and a lot of fruitful conversations, but I think I'd like to just put the bug in CAC to maybe consider meeting a little bit earlier, because the committee attends, has both times so far tended to push up quite closely to council, and that can interfere on starting on time and also just the general flow of how we get going. Just a suggestion, if you don't want to, it's all good. It's all on your, scheduling, but that's all I just like to suggest that. And then item 1A announcements, the next meeting of Students Council will take place on Tuesday, June 18th at 6 p.m. in Council Chambers. And that will conclude my speaker's business. So today we'll start with item 2, presentations. We have a presentation today. Bettinger moves to allow a presentation about the UASU elections. The abstract is that the Chief Returning Officer at the UASU would like to get some thoughts and feedback from Students Council regarding the election season. And Jimmy Tibbleton will be our presenter.
Point of order.
Go ahead.
Can we special order the item on the
way down as a possible? Right, that's speaker's business. My bad, thank you. Rewinding the speaker's business. I will be special ordering everything in the way down as the presentation fits within it, as well as a board and committee business. As well as a item and board and committee business and a motion to move in camera and general orders. Thank you for the reminder. Jumping back to item 2A, presentations. Bettinger is moving the presentation. Can I get a seconder? Vice President Brown. Any opposition to this presentation? Seeing none, I'd like to welcome Mr. Thibodeau to the stage.
Thank you very much for having me here, Council. So,
what I'd like to get through today, I'd like to actually get through the presentation as quickly as I can because I want to allow for a lot of time for questions and feedback from you guys. So it's going to be a bit of an information dump, so be prepared for that, but we're going to try to get through it as quickly as we can. If you need me to slow down, let me know. If you have any questions, let me know. I'll be happy to go over anything a second time. So, the reason I want to have this presentation is because I want to keep council informed and up to date on the elections office, everything that we've been doing. I've had some really good meetings with the marketing department and with a few of the exec team. We have some really good ideas that we'd like to bring forward coming into the by-election and then to the general election later in the year. So I'd like to keep you guys informed on that and have a closer connection. I'm going to be trying to have at least two more of these presentations, one near the end of the fall semester and then one prior to the general election in the winter semester so that I can get a little bit more feedback from you guys and make sure we're on the right track. Secondly, I want to keep getting feedback from you guys. This is a great resource. You guys are all student leaders. You guys are in tune with a lot more of the student vibe than I will be, so I want to make sure that what I'm doing sounds good by you guys, and I hope my ideas hold up to scrutiny. So the first thing I want to bring to your guys' attention is I have to make a decision for the by-election date. Now, I've got two different dates kind of mulling in my head, the week of September 23rd and the week of October 4th. The exact date on there I will pick depending on what we feel is right, but there's two different dates. We're going to be able to compete with other clubs and organizations, so in Clubs Fair, Week of Welcome, we'll be able to draw their attention equally with other clubs, which I think is important because a lot of talented individuals quite often get very involved very early, and they end up taking on more than they had originally anticipated and end up not having time for council. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to compete with them at that opportunity, at the start of the year for their time. Secondly, it's an opportunity for new counselors to be involved very early in the year so that you're not jumping in a month into a new term. You're coming in pretty much as soon as you can into council, as soon as you're elected. Advertising at the start of the year, if we decide to do any advertising campaigns during Week of Welcome or anything else, they're not going to be easily forgotten. In my eye, if we have this earlier start date, we could have the nomination packages out and have them being handed out during Week of Welcome for the by-election and for GFC, which I think would be a great opportunity for even first years to start getting involved and start realizing they could be student leaders, they could be involved in GFC or councils. And of course, if we get the nomination packages out early, they'd be available in more social time, so it's a little bit easier to fill up. Of course, the negatives are that if we do it that early, the by-election could be lost in the shuffle with all of the other Week of Welcome events and any other events early in the year. Some individuals might not have enough time to really think of the decision. If they are a little bit indecisive, they might decide that it's just not right for them instead of having a little extra time to think about it. The by-election could never really be the sole focus because we're jumping from Week of Welcome to our second week activities to the by-election in the third week, and it's just going to be really quick. And it might encourage individuals who are unprepared for the realities of Students' Council to run in the election. So if you're not quite sure what council does, you think it's just kind of cool, you want to join up, you want to be a part of it, and then you get in here and you realize that this is a bit more serious. There is committees that you are usually attending, there are going to be a lot of meetings to attend, and it can be intimidating. You might get some ineffective counselors. The pros of a later date, so maybe around the first week of October is what I'm thinking. It's more time for potential candidates to think about the decision to run, so they have a little bit more time to make the decision, talk to their friends, and decide. More opportunity for advertising to be seen, so our marketing strategies are going to be out there for a little bit longer, so more people might see them than before. The by-election would also be the primary focus for the marketing department in the SU come the time we actually run the by-election, so that might end up being a little bit more targeted of an advertising campaign. Advertising in the first few weeks might be forgotten by the time nominations and elections open, so this is in the cons. So if you're running a lot of advertising in Week of Welcome, which is a prime time to do it, by the time we actually run the election about a month later, it might be forgotten and people might not really understand what council is. They might not really remember what we told them at the start. Advertising over several weeks could be sensitized people to the information, so if we decide to have some posters up on running for council and you see them every single day, you start to just not even realize, and then all of a sudden the by-election is upon you and people have stopped caring. And the final one is that, of course, students could choose clubs or other organizations, faculty associations, as a priority. Join them with the intent of joining council later and then realizing that you have a lot of demands on your time. This is getting to be midterm season, and then you decide to not run for council because you don't have the time, because you've committed it elsewhere. So those are going to be the two options. So if you guys could keep that in mind, I'm going to try to fly through the rest of this material, and then at the end of the presentation, I'm going to be taking some feedback and some questions from people. And if you need me to go over anything else at the end, I'd be happy to do that. Okay, so as the CRO, the elections office, we're trying to get two main objectives across. We're trying to encourage candidacy. Last year we had a fairly low turnout for the executive elections. Encouraging candidacy means that we have more variety, we have very talented individuals running, we have choice, and we have more interest. When we have contested races in every single race, we have a higher voter turnout, and that is a very important thing. Also, we want to promote a very high voter turnout. So those are our two main objectives that we're going for. So when we're encouraging candidacy, we're trying to a few different ways of doing it. So we're going to be working with a digital marketing and a physical advertising strategy that we determine with marketing. So we're going to be trying to have some posters up, we're going to be trying to have some Facebook posts up, and we're going to be trying to really target people early to encourage them to run. We know that most successful candidates for executive start planning their campaigns around October, if not even earlier. We want to make sure that students have that opportunity to realize that this is something they could be interested in and make the decision to run and get prepared before it gets too late in the year. One thing we're going to be trying to do this year is we're going to be trying to market positions to, it says to specific faculties of assumed interest, and I do agree with that, but we're also trying not to exclude anybody from a position. What I mean by that is that every position has their own certain traits that would be attractive to a certain faculty. For example, the Vice President of Operations and Finance, it turns out to be nearly a CFO position for an $11 million company. You're setting a budget, you're running leases, you're negotiating contracts. You are in a very influential position, so obviously business students would probably take a certain interest in that, and that's someone we'd like to advertise to business students who might look at the SU as something like just a political training field where there's other positions that have very different interests. Of course, we have the VP External, where there's a lot more political interest, so poli-sci students, that's a very obvious get. VP Student Life, of course, is very involved in residents and resident students who take an interest and take a leadership position there are going to be very interested in that position. And of course, VP Academic, you could look at that from an education point of view and say that, do you care about a student's experience in the classroom and how can you fight to do that? What kind of experiences are these getting for you? And we're trying to advertise that in these infographics. So we're hopefully going to be getting those out very quickly so that we can start advertising for people. We're also going to be doing candidate workshops again. I know that former president of the SU, Marina Bannister, did these a few years ago, and it gave a lot of people who were candidates in that year's executive election a lot of confidence to run when they started to learn the ins and outs. So President Bhatnagar has been very kind and offered to put up some workshops both in the early part of the fall semester and throughout to the end of, to the general election in March the elections open up. So it will hopefully help candidates who are on the fence or maybe not sure what to do, give them a little bit of extra confidence to run. Finally, what we've come up with the marketing department is that we want to get some testimonials and some profiles to highlight the benefits of the job. So people who've been in the position before, whether they're prolific in the community now, we have some former presidents of the SU in the council, we have some in other places of governance in Edmonton as well, so contacting them and getting them to highlight what their favorite part of the position was, what some of the benefits were, what that experience gave them as they got through their careers, what kind of opportunities it gave them, things like that we're going to try to highlight to really show the benefits of getting into an executive position, hopefully encouraging candidacy there. And of course, we're going to be trying to encourage candidacy in the by-election for GFC and council vacancies that exist. So we'll be doing those in a very similar manner. So getting up the vote strategy, so those testimonials kind of bleed into this as well, where we can ask, why is higher voter turnout important for an SU? This is a very important year. We have voluntary student unionism, which is a threat on the horizon. We want to, one of our greatest weapons against that is to have an engaged student body who is interested in the SU, who is willing to support them and be involved. So if we can get a higher voter turnout, it gives us a little bit more ammunition to fight against that particular threat. So that's why this is a very important theme this year. So again, we're going to have testimonials from people in governance to say why it's important to see a higher voter turnout. We're going to be having posters and infographics to kind of highlight exactly what I said, that it gives our student leaders a little bit more support when we have a high voter turnout to go and talk to people, and we're advocating on behalf of students to say that we have the support of the majority of students instead of 20% of the students. This year, we're also going to be trying different things to encourage some candidacy beyond just highlighting the importance of voting. We're trying to highlight the importance of none of the above as well, so that if students are disenchanted with the SU, if they don't feel like we are supporting them in the way that they want, instead of just not voting out of protest, we're trying to encourage them to vote none of the above and have their voices heard. Right now, we're looking at a 25% voter turnout, and we're assuming 75% of people just don't see us or hear us or care. Maybe they just don't like what the SU is doing, but they can't get their voices across. I would rather a higher voter turnout with more none of the above votes than a lower voter turnout, but no none of the above votes. So that's one thing we're going to be pushing. We're also going to be pushing for physical voting booths this year. A few people are confused about where to vote, so we're going to be trying to include something like a couple of iPads in the middle of sub, in the middle of cab, where students can come up. We could put candidate platforms potentially there. Students can come with a group of friends and everybody votes really quickly on, and then they're done. When you're done, you get a thing like a little get out the vote sticker. One of the things that always annoys students at times of elections is that too many candidates are coming and talking to them and they just want to be left alone. So if they get out there early, they get out and vote, they get a little sticker, they can put it on their laptop, they can put it on their bag, they can put it on their jackets, and all of a sudden now we tell the candidates, don't bother people with I voted stickers, and you're good to go. We'll also be in talks with the SU tech department, I think. We'll be working with them to try to create a little message after you voted that you can display. So even if you don't vote at these booths, you can come up and show us your phone and it says that you have voted or that your CCID has voted. You get a sticker and there you go. This is also has the added benefit is that research has shown that you get pressured into voting if you see that your group of friends or your peers have all voted. So the more you see I voted stickers, the more likely you are to vote. So we're hoping that's going to be effective as well. We're also going to be looking at creating an elections campaign crew, kind of similar to what Stephen Rates just did with the Get Out the Vote campaign for the provincial election. We're going to be looking to get some volunteers from council, from students around the campus, who will be willing to take maybe an iPad or a card of where to vote with the link, and going and talking to people in the same way candidates do on voting day, only instead of pushing a certain candidate, just asking, have you voted yet? No, would you like to vote now? Gives them an option, it takes away the out, and then they have the opportunity. If they don't feel like they're prepared to yet, they get the card, they vote later. So we're hoping that that's going to really push higher for a much higher voter turnout this year when we combine all of those actions. So the further goals, last slide, last things I want to mention is that I also want to talk with the bylaw committee this year so that any changes that are being made to the bylaws of 2100 and 2200, or is it 2200 or 2300? The election bylaws. I'll be able to come in and sit and listen to the discussion. That way I'll understand the spirit of the bylaws, which I think gives me a great advantage having sat on bylaw before. But if any changes come in, I want to know what bylaw has envisioned for them. That way I can make the most accurate decisions when the time comes, when those bylaws get tested. I'd also like to present to council at key times to gather feedback and directions. So again, like I said, I'd like to do this one is important, one near the end of the fall term, and then one at the beginning of the winter term, just to get feedback and to hold myself accountable. I'd like to meet with the Gateway to coordinate and optimize election coverage. So one thing that I think is important is that we make sure we're on the same page. There are a few events that the Gateway has done in the past that the elections office was aware of and didn't communicate to candidates. And the elections office has a lot more access than the Gateway does to certain things. So if we can create a more working relationship there, I think we can have a much more effective coverage. And we can also start having discussions on why the Gateway coverage has seemed to be a barrier for talented individuals who want to run an election, and what the elections office can do to help facilitate that and to help ease those concerns for candidates.
Could you make your last point here? Last point, please. You're out of time.
Oh, am I? Okay. And then the last point is, I'm hopefully hiring some DROs very early in the year by the by-election, so if anybody has any ideas of who would be a good DRO, please let me know as soon as possible so that I can start the process of hiring them as soon as possible. I'd love to get that team around me.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move to extend by 10 minutes.
Okay, just for explanation for council, presentations, and I should have said this beforehand, but we got working on some tech stuff. Count presentations are normally 15 minutes, but can be extended by an additional 10 minutes by a two-thirds majority, which is what Vice President Brown is doing right now. So Vice President Brown is moving to extend, and I'll go with her seconder. Vice President Agarwal, all right, so because we need to be a two-thirds majority, go to our handy-dandy voting system. And go ahead and vote. Is it going?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's good. That shows that you voted, so that it's...
Okay. Yeah, we're good. I'm confused. Okay, voting closed. It passes. You got 10 more minutes.
Awesome. So, first of all, I apologize. I don't know why I thought I had more time than I did, but I did. So, I'll open it up to questions and feedback now, especially as it pertains to the by-election date. So, have at it.
Alright, thank you. Opening this up. First we have President Badgar.
First of all, thank you, Jimmy, for coming in and presenting to us. Yeah, he has a lot of experience in student governance. For folks who don't know, Jimmy was a counselor and also ran for executive portfolios and also was a campaign manager. So he definitely knows what is up here at the UASU for elections. I did want to provide a comment regarding the PC talked about with engaging students, voting with an educated vote. I really do support you trying to find a way to, in a nonpartisan way, of course, connect students with platforms so that students aren't just voting based on a poster, or they're not just voting based on a predetermined bias, but they're taking the time to educate, to make an educated vote. So I commend you on that. In terms of the feedback for the by-election date, I prefer the later date just because it allows for council to perhaps think about opening up our meetings or promoting our meetings so people can come to a meeting of council to see what that's like before deciding to run. And we can do it in an open house style themed around elections perhaps, or themed around getting feedback from current councillors. Because I know a big barrier to running for council is what happens here. It's kind of confusing for a lot of students. And the last piece of feedback I'll give you is the piece that you talked about regarding targeting specific faculties to perhaps run because of the perceived notion that they have the skills. I would press back a little bit on that piece because I do think skills taught at the UVA are transferable heavily. So I always say this to people when people ask me what makes you qualified to run for exec. I truly think the only qualification, there's two. You need to be a student, an undergraduate student. And the other thing is that you need to be self-motivated to actually do something impactful. You need to be in it for the right reasons. So you can learn how to read a budget any day. You can learn how to chair a meeting any day. Those skills the SE will teach you, but we cannot teach you intrinsic motivation. And also it becomes a gendered piece. Because the VP offsite portfolio is seen as such a business-oriented field, we see that there's only been 4 to 5 females in that portfolio for 100 years. So I would push back a little bit against trying to do targeted advertising with faculties, assuming that people in business want to run for only OSFI and not academic, but that's my piece.
Mr. Thibodeau, would you like to respond to questions, or would you like to have people just generally give feedback for now? Because we have quite a number of people on the speaker's list.
If they're going to be just giving feedback, that's all right. If they ask a question, I'll respond.
Sounds great. Okay, we'll go to, we have 81, which is Councillor Sunday. Go ahead, Councillor Sunday.
Thank you for your presentation. Just as a suggestion, and I believe you mentioned it in another slide about testimonials, I would definitely reach out to, off the top of my head, would be Councillor Catherine Belcourt and Deirdre Cunningham. Both of them were former counselors. And highlighting the experience that they had gained and then maybe their experience being on council also fulfills one of the, or doesn't fulfill, but kind of leads into one of the recommendations of ARC, which is highlighting positive Aboriginal student experiences on campus. So I would definitely look into that avenue, especially in trying to increase Aboriginal engagement in the election, as preliminary research kind of shows that there has not been an Aboriginal executive member, so definitely ensuring that there is some kind of messaging around that, I think, would be important. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Sunday. Now we'll go on to Councillor Rogers, all 31.
Thanks for the presentation. I'm just going to echo a lot of what's already been said for a lot of different reasons. So I also support the later by-election date, in large part because as far as STRIDE goes, it probably won't have been started by the first election date, but we'll have a lot more people by the second date, at which point way more STRIDEers will likely be running the by-elections. Great if all of the people elected in the by-elections were STRIDEers, but that's just me. I agree with the part on targeted faculty outreach. One thing to note is that from my understanding of positions like VP OSFI is that it isn't particularly like a budget piece or like a financial piece. Like a lot of that work is done for you by staff. And the VP OSFI who was OSFI for Ricky Patches, VP Bondarchuk, like is not a math person, like did not center any of his work around like finance, and admittedly so, right? And like did a great job regardless. So like being careful around like what the targeting looks like and like how we just like redo the same cycles that we're trying to like challenge would be really important. Speaking of that old exec, one part to be careful about with regards to physical like voting without like getting too much into like the dark times of like SC voting is that there have been lots of challenges in the past with regards to physical voting and lots of like abuse of what that looked like. So that's like a concern that I would certainly have, specifically when it comes to who's managing like voting booths, how we do it respectfully, how we do it in a way that ensures that we're not like abusing students like students trust in us and like students like identities to like vote like against like what they would want to do. And also one last thing, this is like just like a venting thing at this point because like there's a conversation that a lot of counselors have had and it was like very confusing with the last CRO is that a lot of us haven't gotten our money back from like when we submitted our financial forms. I don't know who else can agree with this.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna look into that because I've heard a few things.
We'll now go to 50, which I believe is BP Larson.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. It was very good. Looking through a lot of the things you came through, I do favor the later day as well. Just giving us a little bit more time to prepare and change those bylaws through bylaw committee, looking at preparation of that. But I do think that advertising through Week of Welcome, and especially within the Club Square, like even the potentiality of looking at having a booth in the Club Square where you attract hundreds of people to have one-on-one interaction with them, where you can put up a poster board and present to them what it's like to be a counselor, answer questions right away, and then potentially even have them leave with a nomination package. It really gets the tools in their hands to best suit them for success, for someone to prepare for an election almost a month away. The one point that I had, just a feedback criticism point, was when you mentioned working with the tech department to develop some sort of a software thing where it would populate some sort of a certificate of voting. I was just thinking it would be much more efficient for after voting. I know myself, I voted in the last council election. It gave you a screen at the end of it that said, like, thank you voted. Just a footnote on it that says screenshot and bring to an election official and they'll hand you a sticker. make things a lot more efficient to go out that way. But
yeah.
Other than that, I've got nothing else.
So actually, I'm just going to respond to that point real quick. I have talked with President Bhatnagar, so we are looking at getting a little banner at the end of that. I can't remember what it said at the end of last year's voting, so it could have said thank you for voting, but if so, then that's all right. That we'll keep it that way, but if not, then we can change that to something similar. And second of all, we've talked about the Week of Welcome Pubs Fair table. This year, we're looking at different ways of trying running it so that we might have a staff person there who's going to be there for the entire week so that we have a little bit more of a consistent presence. For those who were on council last year, it was a little bit more difficult to make sure that people were actually there during Clubs Fair. And having a purpose in mind of encouraging people to run for GFC and for council gives us a better focus. So I think we'll definitely be looking into that.
Thank you. Next on the list is Councillor Desha. And I'd just like to make note that we have a minute and a half left.
So just a point for clarification. So I know you do get out the vote campaigns for federal and provincial elections, and you want to use the same team for our elections, which I know we do a lot for the AC elections and stuff. So how are you going to make it so that they're different in the eyes of the public? Because when I personally did get out the vote this last one, like everyone asked me, like, is this for the SU elections? And like a lot of people like didn't want to take part because they thought it was a part of it. So I don't want our campaigns to be influencing how federal or provincial voter turnout occurs. So like, what plans do you have in place to keep that separate?
Okay. That's a point that I haven't actually considered before. I'm not sure how much it's really going to affect the federal voter turnout, considering the federal election will be in October. Provincial election has already occurred, so I'm not sure. In the future, that's something we're going to have to definitely look at. I think having a dedicated team towards the actual UASU elections, very clear marketing about that, and making sure you identify yourself would definitely help. But I do understand your point. There's going to have to be some thought put into that. Exactly. That's kind of what I'm thinking in my head.
Thank you, Mr. Councillor. Go ahead.
Point of clarification, Mr. Speaker. So Jenny is the CRO for only the SU elections. The federal GoTV campaign that will be happening, we are hiring someone else. That doesn't go through this election office. Just as clarification.
Okay, thank you. And Councillor Falls, you're next on the speaker's list. Do you have a different point? So currently in standing orders, there is no mechanism to extend presentations by further time. And judging by our agenda today with one other presentation and some other larger items, I would like to see that we cut it off at 10 minutes, and then any additional feedback or questions can be emailed directly to cro@su.yoalberta.ca, or you can set up where you can give them that feedback, or you can set up a meeting individually to provide feedback. Unless I see any opposition or any challenges to speaker. Cool. Seeing none? Okay, thank you very much for coming in. Thank you for the presentation. Councilor Dixon?
Sorry, can you
hear me? Yeah, no worries. Was I far away? Could you not hear me? That's okay. So email is cro@su.ualberta.ca. cro@su.ualberta.ca. Thanks for the photo.
All right.
Next up, we have a special order from the late ads. Sunday moves to allow a presentation on the final report of the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. Look for a seconder on this presentation. Councilor Barber-Salva, any opposition? Seeing none, with that I'll read the description of the presentation. In accordance with the Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation Committee standing orders and recommendations, the Chair of ARC will present a short oral report regarding the principal conclusions on the final report of the the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. In addition, a discussion of how we, as Students Council and the Students Union, can embody the spirit of the final report in our work will be presented. I'd like to welcome Councillor Sunday to the floor to present for the presentation. Sure. I'm going to shut off the screen as to not distract. And I will get that to you as soon as possible. I'm clearing all mics from last. And please go ahead.
Thank you. So I just wanted to as a preamble before I read out my statement, discussed with Aboriginal Student Council kind of the report, and they had agreed that it would be important to inform kind of Students Council and the Student Union of the report and what it means. So as such, I have the report and I showed it to the president, who was all right with it, just kind of what I'll say. As well, I would ask everyone, just kind of with the content matter we're dealing with, if you could put away electronics. I will not force the issue though. If you want to keep your electronics on, that's fine. But I will now go into my written statement. So I wanted to spend some time today to discuss the recently released Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Final Report. The over 1,000-page report painstakingly detailed the effects of colonization, violence, and sexism on the lives of Aboriginal women, girls, and LGBTQ2S individuals. The totality of compounding forces against Aboriginal women, girls, and LGBTQ2S individuals amounts to a genocide, a principal conclusion of the report which Aboriginal people have known for years. Article 2 of the United Nations Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide defines genocide as any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. As such, A, killing members of the group, B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, D, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, and E, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. My following remarks will be divided between these five constituted acts of genocide, and the statistics provided throughout can be found in the final report itself. So, one, killing members of the group. The RCMP stated that Aboriginal women made up roughly 16% of all female homicides between 1980 and 2012, despite making up only 4% of the female population. Despite remaining only 4% of the female population, Aboriginal women and girls now make up 25% of homicide victims. And the numbers are rising, not falling. Today, Aboriginal women and girls are 12 times more likely to be murdered or missing than any other woman in Canada, and 16 times more likely than a Caucasian woman. Two, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. Aboriginal women are sexually assaulted 3 times more often than non-Aboriginal women. And most of the women and children trafficked in Canada are Aboriginal. Research by Sherry Kingsley and Melanie Mark show that, in some communities, sexually exploited Aboriginal children and youth make up 90% of the visible sex trade, even where Aboriginal people make only 10% of the community. One Ontario study of gender-diverse and two-spirit Aboriginal people found that 73% had experienced some form of violence due to transphobia, with 43% having experienced physical or sexual violence. Oftentimes, the blame is placed on Aboriginal women for, quote, living a risky lifestyle. In discussing the death of her daughter, Bernice C. stated, someone stole her, had no right to her, had no right to take her. She could have had a baby. She could have got married. But that was taken from her. Somebody decided that she didn't have a right to live, but she had every right to live. Secondly, the belief that missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls live a, quote, high-risk lifestyle is rooted in stereotype and myth. According to Statistics Canada, even when all other differentiating factors are accounted for, Aboriginal women are still at a significantly higher risk of violence than non-Aboriginal women. As stated in the final report, this validates what many Indigenous women and girls already know. Just being Indigenous and a female makes you a target. Three, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. In 2016, the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal ruled that the federal government's approach to services for First Nations children were discriminatory. the tribunal found that the federal government was racially discriminating against 165,000 First Nations children for its failure to provide equitable services, including the proper implementation of Jordan's principles. Jordan's principle is named in the memory of Jordan River Anderson. Anderson, a child from Norway House, Cree Nation, was born with complex medical needs. For over 2 years, Jordan was forced to stay unnecessarily in the hospital while the federal government and the province of Manitoba argued over who would pay for his home care. At the age of 5, Jordan died in the hospital, having never spent a day of his life in his home community, while the federal government and the province debated still over who would pay for his care. As stated in the final report, to date, the federal government has received 7 non-compliance orders from the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal for not complying with its legally binding ruling. The final report also stated that the systematic racism that Indigenous people in Canada have experienced and continue to experience has had major consequences on outcomes of poverty, substance abuse, violence, and mental health. In practice, this results in Aboriginal women suffering rates far greater of heart disease and stroke, higher rates of suicide attempts, disproportionately living in poverty as single parents, and over-incarcerated, with over-incarceration rates having increased by 90% over the last decade. 4, imposing measures intended to prevent births from within the group. As discussed in the final report, between 1928 and 1972, the Alberta Eugenics Board approved 99% of the 4,785 cases. Over time, increasing numbers of its decisions involved people who did not give their consent to be sterilized. Although legislation concerning eugenics did not explicitly target Aboriginal peoples, research shows that in Alberta, First Nations women were the most likely to be sterilized in relation to their per capita population in the province. In discussing forced sterilization, Emily Murphy, Canada's first female court judge, wrote this, and I quote, "One hardly knows whether to take the Indian as a problem, a nuisance, or a possibility. Regarding his future, we may give ourselves little uneasiness. The solution is solving itself, or sorry, the question is solving itself, i.e. sterilization. A few years hence, there will be no Indians. They will exist for posterity, only in waxwork figures and in a few scant pages in history." These ideas continue to provide the foundations for racist thought, which view Aboriginal women as oversexual and promiscuous. Although Alberta's Sterilization Act was appealed in 1972, Aboriginal women across the country recount experiences of coerced sterilization even today. Contemporarily, the province of Saskatchewan is facing a class action lawsuit on behalf of Aboriginal women who provided evidence that they were sterilized without their consent. This is happening in 2019. 5. Forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. Beginning in the mid-1950s and the result of provincial policies, the 60s Scoop is a catch-all name detailing the experiences of thousands of Aboriginal children taken from their homes and families, placed in foster care, and eventually adopted out to white families across Canada and the United States. These children lost their names, their languages, and a connection to their heritage. As stated in page 355 of the report, maybe the government was beginning the process to close residential schools down, but the 60 Scoop policy was the replacement. In other words, they continued coming onto our reserves, taking us children. The only thing that had changed was that they sent us to middle-class white families across the country. Some of these families were good, some bad, and some were horrific. Today, although only accounting for 7% of all children in Canada, Aboriginal children make up 48% of children in the foster care system. Many of these children are placed into non-Aboriginal families, effectively divorcing them from their culture. So in addition to the count of genocide, one of the key sections of the final report is its four pathways that maintain violence. As stated in the report, these pathways continue to enforce the historic and contemporary manifestations of colonialism that lead to violence. They are, one, historical, multi-generational, and intergenerational trauma. Two, social and economic marginalization. Three, maintaining the status quo and institutional lack of will. And four, ignoring the agency and expertise of Indigenous women, girls, and LGBTQ people. These examples, as well as the many others provided throughout the report, and the four pathways that maintain violence, provide a justification for describing the experiences of Aboriginal women, girls, and LGBTQ individuals as a genocide. The purpose of the National Inquiry and its final report is not about shame or guilt. It was about providing survivors and their families the opportunity to share their truths. We have to get past the shame and guilt. And this starts with truth. And these are hard truths requiring complex solutions. The finding of this report should make us all uncomfortable and provide an impetus for us to fight for change. At every level, from grassroots to student association to the various levels of government, there is something we can all do to actualize positive change. In terms of Students Council and the Students Union, this could take many forms. The final report and its over 200 calls for justice could inform the Students Union's response to the university's plan to prevent and respond to incidents of sexual violence on campus. It could mean applying an intersectional and decolonial lens to policy reviews, including the equity, diversity, and inclusivity, sexual violence, and students in governance political policies. Unless we work together towards the decolonization of settler colonial institutions, we will continue to walk among a field of graves. No matter how small these changes may seem, we can all do something to stop the genocide against Aboriginal women, girls, and LGBTQ individuals. Justice Murray Sinclair, Chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada, eloquently articulated the road we must all travel together, and I quote, "The road we travel is equal in importance to the destination we seek. There are no shortcuts. When it comes to truth and reconciliation, we are all forced to go the distance." I encourage everyone to take some time and read through the report, or at least the report summary. The National Inquiry's commissioners stated that it is every Canadian's responsibility to no longer turn a blind eye to this injustice, and I cannot agree more. In closing, I want to say that these women may be missing or murdered, but their spirits will live on. They are gone, but not forgotten. Thank you.
Presentation, Councillor Sunday. We do have a minute and a half left in the presentation for comments or questions. I'm seeing none. We'll close the presentation there. Thank you so much, Councillor Sunday, for that impactful and meaningful presentation. We'll now move on to the next item of the agenda, which is item three, Executive Committee Reports. Would any of the members of the Executive like to make a report? Vice President Brown.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hello, everyone. I'd just like to start off by commending Councillor Sunday. That was an extremely well-articulated and moving presentation, so thank you for that. A few things to update on. So I was at the, along with President Batnagar and our external advocacy advisor, I was at the Foundations Conference of the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations in Ottawa last week. I was honored and privileged to be re-elected as chair of the board of directors of the organization, which I'm very happy to do and to keep representing students' voices to the federal government for the next year. We also took part in a cultural competency training session, a Kairos blanket exercise. We underwent advocacy training. We got into initial discussions with our membership across the country on advocacy priorities. That's going to be a process that takes a few months to get done. And we accepted a new member into the membership, the Graduate Student Association of the University of Calgary. So we are now at 23 members, representing about 260,000 students from across the country and about 360,000, including our partners in Quebec. So that was CASA. It was fantastic, but I'm very glad to be back in my own bed, even for a week. Next week, I'll be in Ottawa presenting to a Senate committee on the federal budget on CASA's behalf, just getting our thoughts on things like the 6-month interest-free grace period on student loans, which was a huge win that we've called for years. I'll also be there for a couple of days to take part in our board of directors retreat as well, which is exciting. And last thing was, this morning I attended the convocation for the U-School program from the University of Alberta Senate. It's a great program that brings in elementary and junior high school students to experience what it's like to be at the university. They do various art and photography projects, science experiments, all sorts of exciting things. And it was really cool to sit up on the platform and watch a lot of them get honored for their work and see how inspired they were by their travels here to the University of Alberta and hopefully the our future members of the Students' Union. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Vice President Brown. I'm going to move to Vice President Stapp.
Hello, Council. I apologize for the grogginess. I'm quite sick at the moment, so I might be talking a little bit quieter today. There isn't too much for me to report. Vice President Larson and myself went to Montreal for about a week for the Student Care Conference. Last week we got back. It was pretty informative. They went over the plan, some ideas they have for the future of the plan, as well as some just general marketing ideas they have to better communicate the plan to students in the fall. Outside of that, I've been working a bit on the executive compensation package, which we'll find the late additions to talk about tonight, as well as starting discussions around the beginning of the meetings for both ARC and the new version of CERC that we had an extensive discussion about last week will be very exciting. Besides that, there's a lot of other little things I'm working on, but nothing I feel is worth letting Council know of at the moment. There is one very exciting thing I will be discussing with Council tonight in camera, which is one of the main reasons why I'm sitting in this chair right now, even though I'm sick. So looking forward to talking to you all about that later tonight.
Point of information.
Or point of inquiry.
Are you contagious?
We don't know.
I'd like you to
concern about.
Yeah, that's what
I'm saying.
We don't want two effects now.
Councillor, direct things to me first, please. That's not the purpose of that. Yes. Vice President Staff, you finished?
Yep.
Alright.
I want to first one number.
Yes.
Is there a way that you can dim the lights like you did the last time?
Yes. There are. They're on 50% already. We will get to that at the end of the executive committee reports. Okay, next up is Vice President Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So the last couple of weeks, Vice President Staff and I left for Student Care shortly after our last Students' Council meeting, and Student Care was a very informative conference. A lot of the speakers were quite good. I got to meet some interesting people, and a previous alumni from the Gateway was there presenting, actually, so it was nice that he decided to pull up our poster slam and read out the comments in front of all the delegates from around Canada. That was great, thank you. But also, after the Student Care Conference, we did have some personal vacation days, which was nice to just sort of kick back and immerse ourselves into the Montreal's culture. And I actually learned a lot, and it was quite nice to be back in the Francophone community. Picked up the language a little bit again there, which was good. Coming down the gun for Student Life Portfolio, the Days of Action Committee is ramping up and finalizing their plans for the 6 days of action that we're going to be hosting this year. And ironically, I get to chair that committee at the next one where we finalize everything. So it looks like we're going to be rolling well on that. The ResFest Planning Committee has decided that the charity, our charity aspect is going to be tailored towards sexual violence and the prevention of sexual violence. And it'll be tailored through the third week of September, so more to come from there. But only had a couple days back in office this week, and today we got to present some of our goals to Dean of Students, and they seemed like they were quite excited about where we were heading and the large mandate that we're tackling here this year. So things are looking good, but I'll pass on from there.
Thank you, Vice President Larson. We'll now move to Vice President Agarwal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I found you back. I hope you missed me. I was away in Ireland for the Worldwide Universities Network Conference, which was quite an experience. It was very packed for an entire week. It was essentially a group of 26 or so universities, major research universities from around the world, talking about research and policy. And this year, for the first time, they had students involved. So I was able to meet students from students' unions across the country, from Cape Town University, Australia, Britain, Norway, all over the world, which is really cool. And let me tell you something. We, at the Students' Union here at the U of A, are top-notch. We are doing an incredible job. So, that being said, there are still things that need to be addressed. There are things to push for, and I'm so excited to have to be in the midst of such amazing people this year. So I'm excited to. I think it was an eye-opening experience for me being there. Earlier this week, I was at the. Oh, one more thing. Yeah. So we created a report on some key issues, whether it's tuition, whether it's mental health, or whether it's research, and we're reporting that to the presidents of all of those universities. Earlier last week, I was at the Edmonton Economic Future. We've talked a lot. I talked a lot about work integrated learning, so I was able to push that forward. A lot of key influential people, counselors, city counselors, are kind of aware that that's an issue for students. A lot of students are graduating and they can't get jobs, so that's a big one. Speaking about research, there's in the working a research event, potentially 1 or 2 days. The aim of this would be to educate undergraduates regarding the importance of research and ways they can get involved. So I'm looking around for people who are interested. I know I've had some interest from a couple counselors already to be on kind of a discussion working group. I'll probably
thank you, Vice President
soon. Thank you.
Now move to President Bhatnagar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So just to add to my written report, as Vice President Brown said, we just returned from CASA in Ottawa. It was an amazing time. Truly, I actually love CASA a lot, so I was very happy to be there. I have a really, really, really busy few weeks, as per usual. So if you need to contact me, please just email me and I'll try to get back to you as soon as possible. So some of the key things that I've done is I finally had the opportunity to meet with the First Nations, Métis, and Inuit specialist that we've hired at the University of Alberta Students Union. Her name is Megan, and she is fantastic. Was part of the discussions regarding Students Council for a while, actually, so has a lot of context. And so we talked about their goals going forward and how we can truly, authentically think about ways to improve the Students Union and the efforts that we make regarding reconciliation and moving forward. And as Nathan, or Councillor Sunday was talking about truths that are very uncomfortable and ensuring that Indigenous students aren't having to relive traumas every single day just to be heard in an everyday setting. So it was a great opportunity to finally discuss her priorities. The biggest governance file that I'm working on right now is simply the international student tuition rates. I attached an information item to our order papers today, so it's public to the student body, but also emailed you all the rates. As I stated in my report, I will be voting no to the rate increases going forward at Academic Planning Committee tomorrow because they were, in my opinion, they were much too high and did not reflect the needs of students regarding affordability. And the last thing is that executive committee will be going on an in-town retreat on Friday to discuss our strategic planning for the summer and also our goals document. So hopefully in the next few weeks, we're gonna bring our first draft of our goals tier to Students Council to look for your feedback. So if you have any preliminary feedback, just in general, please let me know. But otherwise, I'm looking forward to a great meeting today. Thank you.
Thank you, President Bhatnagar. We'll conclude executive committee reports there, and I'm gonna mess with the lighting.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try one more. So those middle ones, that's as low as they'll go. How's that? Sounds great. Yeah, that's about the best I can do. All right, with that, we'll move now to item 4, board and committee reports. And I'll start with audit committee. Representative, like to provide a report. Please press your button.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hi, everyone.
For audit, we are doing really well. We approved ECSA's year report, ESA's year report, and ICE's winter report. We also approved June 28th as the deadline for receiving outstanding reports. So after that, we're not going to be accepting any more reports. Currently, we have 12 reports in progress, and our next meeting is June 11th at 5:15.
Point of personal privilege.
Go ahead.
We refrain from using acronyms. I do it a lot, but we refrain from using acronyms so that we can participate.
Great point. I'd like to ask members of council, please refrain from using acronyms whenever possible to make sure that everyone is fully aware of the organizations and pieces you're talking about. I'm going to move to bylaw committee.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure about the arc. Do I get to, is it alphabetically that these go, or?
Yeah, sorry, all I was doing, that's my bad, I was just reading off of the minutes from last meeting because it's got a nice list. So I would like to now ask Art.
Thank you. So we will be meeting next. So we'll be meeting on the 11th at 5 p.m. We will receive a draft of the treaty acknowledgement workshop that the new FNMI specialist is working on. I encourage everyone to come to that if you'd like to learn more. And don't forget, every member of Students' Council is a member of the Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation Committee. I ask all as well that everyone reads my written report in which I discuss the priorities for this upcoming year. I just want to say quickly what I did not include in my written statement was that although a lot of the stuff that was mentioned was negative, I again would encourage everyone to read the report because throughout the report it discusses through stories and through people's experiences the incredible resiliency and power of Indigenous women. And while I did not say that, I fully acknowledge it, and I cannot do justice what the stories in the report could do, and I would just encourage everyone to read them. And other than that, like I said, we're meeting on the 11th for a workshop for anyone who'd like to learn more, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Sunday, and thank you for correcting me on that. I'll now move to bylaw committee. And move to forward that, Councillor Barrier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Bylaw committee, due to a variety of reasons, was unable to have a meeting last week, and we will be working to have a meeting as soon as possible. One such reason was personally sad for me, but one of our members has stepped down from the role, so we will be filling that position later today. So as soon as that position is filled, we will be working to have a meeting to set up and go as soon as possible from there. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Draper. Would a member from the Council Administration Committee like to provide a report? I see Councillor Beasley. Go ahead.
So today we had our PAC meeting. We did a lot of cool stuff. The first thing we did was we resolved to do a lot more in regards to social media for Council. So to that end, Councillor Padouche has been appointed as the new social media coordinator. So that's awesome. Some of the things we're hoping to do include the curation of like UASU Council page, and just generally getting out more information about who we are as Council by working with the SU social media coordinator to monitor people. Also, we've resolved to implement the Useful Dish program in time for the next council meeting, so that's also super exciting. I'll see if we can have a presentation on it next meeting as well, just to give everyone like a little rundown of what the Useful Dish program looks like. This will also be explained in greater detail next meeting, but starting next meeting, there will be an expectation that people rinse off their dishes. Please. It's a basic thing, but we'll get into that a little bit more next week. And the last thing we did a little bit more work in regards to like the council gear situation, and we're going to continue doing some more work next meeting as well and pushing that up.
Yeah. Thank you, Councillor Beasley, and I volunteered my time to have a personal announcement in speaker's business to remind everyone to clean their dishes. It's pretty simple. Okay, members of the executive committee. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So executive committee has actually not met in a long time because we've all been out of town. So today actually is the first day that we've all been here in person together for 14 days. And dang, I missed the crew a lot while I was gone. But we met on Monday for executive committee, and the only motion we did pass was the job description for the external advocacy advisor. So this is the person that will travel with the BPA external and the president to major CASA and cause conferences. And so we've been reshuffling some departments, so now the external advocacy advisor will also be taking on media relations. So that means taking in interviews, preparing us for interviews. And so the job description update was just a simple update of the description of the job, and there was nothing else attached to that in terms of pay or anything. So that was the only thing that executive committee approved.
Thank you, President Bamgar. Now we move to finance committee. Vice President Statway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So Finance Committee met this week, and we pretty much just discussed the executive compensation package and obviously finished our changes and recommendations for that to bring to Council tonight. In addition to that in-person meeting, we also had a quick vote over email for granting committee positions that are filled by Finance Committee members, which was also done, I believe, during the weekend. But those were the only two move motions that were discussed, the most prevalent to Council being the executive compensation package, which will be discussed tonight. Thank you, and that's everything.
Thank you, Vice President Staff. We'll go from a member from nominating committee. Go ahead.
We canceled the meeting last Monday because only two people came. After considering the pros and cons to have a face meeting, we decide only meet when necessary. Online meeting is also an option. We will vote by email if necessary. As a chair, we'll also share information and get from Discover Governance to the WhatsApp. So that's what I get today. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Chen. Now go to a member from Policy Committee.
Mr. President. Policy Committee met last Tuesday. We meet every second Tuesday at 6:30. If you can look at the answered question that I was brought to by President Bamgar, there's an extensive response there, put a lot of time into it. But a quick summary, basically, some of the things to keep on your radar. Last council had a policy that was ready to go forward. It wasn't brought forward because they ran out of time. So the what was previously called the reconciliation policy, now known as the Indigenous Students Policy, I believe, needs to go through first reading and second reading. Both ARC and Policy Committee are going to look at that, just to like look at it one last time, so that like the decisions of the last council aren't the decisions of our council. But with all things hopefully being as we plan them to be, we'll hopefully have new policy for you on June 18th, so 2 weeks from now, that would be the Indigenous Students Policy. Apart from that, we are still working on renewing a lot of policies. We've started some conversation around new policies, namely policies for free speech, policies for mandatory student unionism, but we have talked a little bit about putting those a little bit on the back burner, just to focus primarily on renewing policy to get that out of the way, and so that we don't have like so that we're not trying to focus on too many things at the same time, otherwise nothing will really get done. So I encourage you to read through my response to President Bamgar if you haven't. That kind of gets over all of it. Definitely let me know if you have any questions during question period. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Vargasola. We'll now go to Translation Committee. And that's Councillor Hoosh.
Yep. So Translation Committee met 2 weeks ago. The 22nd. We're meeting up tomorrow. We have three translations currently on the go. And we have to create an ending. So I'm working on that. Yeah, we'll meet tomorrow.
Thank you, Councillor Hirsch. And we have Student Group Committee. Councillor Sunday, go ahead.
Thank you. I believe this is my first time doing a committee report for this committee. For those who may not be aware, I was elected as chair of the committee. However, we have not met quorum anytime. And mainly that is because we have some student at large positions we have to fill. But once those are filled, I'm expecting that we will meet and the committee will be underway. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Sunday. And from the Board of Governors, Governor Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So the Board of Governors had a meeting last Monday. I was in BC, but I called in. This meeting was to approve the university's annual financial statements. And what that essentially means is we just vote on whether or not this document fairly and accurately represents the university's financial position. So I'm just going to tell you a bit about what that looks like and why it's important to students. So this year the university had a $2.1 billion budget. Out of that, they ran a $123 million surplus. Now, of that $123 million, $76 million is needed for future costs that they know they're going to have, so they can't spend it now. And then there's a few other things that the money has to be used for, but there's $28 million left over that they're voluntarily using to pay down the university's debt. And while it's important to pay down the university's debt over time, they have an aggressive timetable to do it. And to give you an idea of how much $28 million is, that's about $1,000 for each undergraduate student. So when the university tells you that tuition increases are needed for financial reasons, or that there's not enough money to invest more in mental health, they do have $28 million hanging around that they have discretion over what they do with it. So that should be interesting to all students. And one other small thing, I had my first meeting of the Board Reputation and Public Affairs meeting last Friday. We approved the university's annual report to the government, which I think has some good messages that will encourage the government to maintain the university's funding and support, particularly about how U of A graduates are important to the jobs market in Alberta. And personally, I've started a new job, so I've been pretty busy. But as always, if you're interested in what's going on the board, don't hesitate to get in touch, and our next meeting's on June 15th.
Thank you, Governor Lee. And unless I missed any committees, only missed one today. Amazing. I'll conclude board and committee reports there, and I move to item 5, open forum, and I'll open the first 15 minutes of open forum. And a reminder that this is a time for members of the Students Union, aka students, to ask questions of the members of Students Council. And I do have everyone I see in the audience registered, so you're all good to go. And I'll open the time now. And starting with Mr. Booster. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure who to address this question to. I think I was told to address it to Vice President Stad due to your involvement with being on like the Public Transit Committee or something. I'm not sure if that's the right person to address it to. I'm sorry if it's not. Please direct if it's not. My question is with regards to the UPass. Is there any interest in advocating for students who maybe aren't employed by the university but are going to be here over the course of the summer, or even recent grads, to buy into the spring-summer UPass just because as a more affordable option to tie them over until they can be more financially stable? Because otherwise it's like $400 up for those 4 months if there's a way to bridge that gap for students who may not have that.
Thank you for the question. And I'm aware, Vice President Stad, you are on the committee, so it's appropriate to start to you. I will give you the floor. There you go.
So I have sat on two committee meetings for the UPass. Neither committee is well enough to get a point. It's something that I wouldn't be opposed to bringing up. However, the UPass is negotiated on contract every 5 years, I believe. So that might be something that would have to be brought into a new contract as opposed to something the university could. Even for the good of students. I believe the next contract renewal comes up in the next 2 years or so, but it is something that's the last in the next committee meeting, and I'll make note of it to see if there's any ability to make that happen. That's also something I would be opposed to discussing with you further after.
I have a question from 52, yourself. Councillor Smale.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, if you can do, if you're like worried about that, you can always register for a class. And within that first like 4 days or whatever, you can get your UPass, draw
point
for class.
Yes,
point of order.
Point of order accepted. From President Banner. President Banner.
I just have a point of order, because I think this is not a question. And
point of information.
That's a good point of information then.
Point of, yeah, okay. I'll just interject. No, Vice President Larson, go for it.
I just wanted to further elaborate that the UPass administration within the registrar's office has systems that notify them of when that happens, and that they will cancel your UPass and send you emails and whatnot asking for you to pay or for you to return your sticker.
What I was told is that you actually get it paid in the fall, so you just get it bumped into your extra fees.
According to the registrar's office, that's...
Point of order. Order.
Order. Order. Yeah. Councillor Smale, Councillor Smale, I'd like to ask you to please follow the speaker's list and speaker's orders. We won't have back and forth in this house. It will only be when you place it down, ask a question, and we'll move forward. also like to remind council that we cannot, as members, recommend things that are against rules, against law, or against anything that has been put in agreements set forth with the Students' Union. And just from my own knowledge of the contract that I negotiated, that what you just elaborated on is against the rules of the contract. So signing up for a UPass, dropping your class, and then just using the UPass is against the rules of the contract and strictly, and like Vice President Larson said, enforced by the university to not do that. We will continue with open forum. Would any guests like to ask questions of the council? Gateway? Nothing? Okay. I'll be closing open forum in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Thank you. We'll now move to item 6, question period. And I would just like to bring everyone's attention, there was a written question submitted and answered, which Councillor Vargasalva did address in their report based on policy committee. President Banagher, do you have any follow-ups? President Banagher, do you have any follow-up to the answer that you received to your written question?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, because of the written question state priority, I'll give that to the floor to President Banagher, and then move forward with the question period. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was wondering, Councillor Vargasalva, first of all, did they put your name right in the book? Okay. Second of all, my question is regarding what you think. So you did mention some of the priorities that were coming forward, such as a policy regarding voluntary student unionism, a policy regarding free speech, student to parent. Are there any timelines for any of these policies? Because I know the free speech one is like very top of mind for university and government right now, just because of like events that are happening politically, and so I'm just wondering if there's a timeline or if you're just waiting, like if it's more of a committee discussion.
Thank you, President Banagher, and Councillor Vargasalva, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, President Banagher. So one of the things that we talked about and one of the action items that we set at the last meeting was the expectation of both VP Larson and VP Agarwal, who were there, and it's VP Brown as well, to bring a timeline to our next meeting for what that process will look like, namely what the possibility of the policy creation process will look like and what possibility of a consultation process would look like. So not to start working on the policy right away, but for when we do have time to start working on the policy, like we'll have all the groundwork set and know what it is to expect, like how long it's gonna take. One thing that I did note is that like a lot of these policies are incredibly urgent because they're topical, but almost all of the policies that we're working on are just as urgent. Right? Central policy, centralized policy, like if it doesn't get renewed, like it's gone, right? So it lapses. So all these things are just as important. It just happens to be that they've already been created. So that's one thing that I wanted to note, is that we do want to make sure that we are getting like our policy done in timely manners that works with the ways in which like the administration and in which they come to the Students' Union as a whole, but we also don't want to rush past like policy that we have to renew. And honestly, like the best way to do it is to just focus on the renewable policy, renew it, and then we'll have like the rest of the year to work on as much policy as we want. That was what was recommended to me from the last chair, and it seemed to work pretty well, but they passed like 13 policies last year.
Thank you, Councillor Vargasalva. We'll go now to, I believe, Councillor Slambe.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In a previous report to Students' Council, the President stated that the Council of Aboriginal University Students selected its priorities for the coming year, which included sexual violence, student financial aid, work-integrated learning, mental health, and institutional funding. However, during the previous council term on January 22nd, PAWS stated that one of its goals was to, and I quote, indigenizing approach and policy. Is CAUSE no longer pursuing this goal as it was not a selected priority this year? Thank you.
Yeah, Councillor Sunday, can you just repeat who you're addressing that to?
Oh,
President Banagher?
Yes.
Please go ahead, President Banagher.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Speaker. So according to Councillor Sunday,
What he's referring to that some people might have missed is a while ago in January, the Council of Alberta University Students' Cause, a provincial group, gave a presentation where they unfortunately misspoke regarding a lot of topics, and one of those topics was Indigenous students. Since then, ARC drafted a letter to CAUSE. Because of a membership change of CAUSE, so membership is like the five schools who are part of CAUSE, we are finally finalizing a response to Councillor Sunday's letter, which will be coming back to him hopefully in the next week or two. But to answer the question regarding is Indigenous issues not a priority of CAUSE, that's not true, because we don't want to make it an advocacy priority when we don't have enough research right now to back it up. And so right now, CAUSE has determined it to be a research priority for the organization, meaning that we are going to be taking Councillor Sunday's feedback from that meeting in terms of finding ways that we can better talk to Indigenous students across all five of our campuses, ways that we can hire students who actually reflect the needs of what we're talking about. And so we're not doing what CAUSE did the other last year, where they came up there and tokenized students and spoke on behalf of a group of students that they do not right now fully, wholly represent. And so CAUSE this year again has made it a research priority. And if we don't have the research or policy developed, we don't want to bring things preemptively to government. So we will be keeping ARC, the FNOI specialist, Aboriginal Students Council, and First Peoples House in mind when we are going forward this research priority. And I'll be sure to update Council on all of the, I guess, progress going forward. And I look forward to any other questions of clarification you may have.
Thank you.
Point of information?
Yes, go ahead.
First of all, just thanks for your response. But I would just want, just for a point of information, the letter that was discussed was drafted by the Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation Committee, not myself.
Thank you for that clarity. We'll now move on to Councillor Vargas Alba. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is for Bog Rep Lee. So, as you noted, part of the way in which you were part of the meeting for Bog that just happened was that you called in. So assuming that it was a call of good quality, to what degree are we supposed to expect the BOG excuse that their buildings don't have the infrastructure to live stream their meetings?
Thank you. And please go ahead. Wait, are you
A5? A5? Yeah.
There you go.
I will admit that the call was actually extremely poor quality, to the point that I could barely tell what was going on. I know President Bhatnagar had the same problem, so I actually had to ask at the end to clarify a bunch of numbers, because I just couldn't hear them. So I don't really think that speaks to the broader issue, though. I do know there's fast Wi-Fi in the building, and this was probably a call run through a phone line and not the Wi-Fi. Of course, dealing with the issue of the live streaming of board meetings isn't going to happen quite overnight, but I am pretty confident that we should make progress on this in the next few months.
Thank you, Governor Lee. We'll now move on to Councillor Bowes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So this question is for President Bhatnagar. So when I see the SU page for XX, first of all, it hasn't been updated yet. And secondly, why don't I see any agendas or minutes from the Executive Committee? Thank you, that was all.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To answer your first question, if you go into uasu.ca/executives, our bios are all there. So that part should be updated. I think I'm not sure what part you're referring to regarding the first question. In terms of the second question regarding where the agendas and the minutes are, unfortunately, I do not have an answer for you at this point. Our executive coordinator has been out of town for a few weeks, and so as soon as she's back, I'll make sure that that is the first priority she's had. We have only had, I believe, three meetings, but I can also provide, if you ask the question, a more fulsome report or discussions if you need.
Thank you, President Bhatnagar. Now move on to Councillor Verdesha.
Sorry, this question's for Phoebe. I can't see your placard. I forgot your last name. I'm sorry. But
Bernakis.
Sorry?
Bernakis.
Bernakis, okay. This is my question to Councillor Bernakis. Have you reached out to your faculty association at all, like the VSA? I just wanted to, I had some questions about some model, just how they do like a student survey, and I wanted to try and get some information from what I meet with my FA.
Can you clarify what you're meeting about?
So I'm going to be meeting with my FA regarding just how they want the year to look like and what we want from them, and just trying to keep their values in line with ours. And so something specifically that I heard is that the BPSA has a really good student survey. And so I know that ICE isn't the best right now, and their feedback isn't the greatest from students. So then I just wanted to see what the BSA does, or like maybe get that contact through you so that I can see how that's done.
Thank you.
I've just been motioned by, not motioned, Counselor Ismail is actually on the BSA, so I think if you could direct that question to him, he could better answer that for you.
Yeah, so the survey was actually pretty comprehensive. I remember it took me like 30 minutes, so I thought it was a bit too long. But I'm sure like it usually comes out within March. That's what happened this year. I don't know what you guys were hoping to actually send out the survey, but I know that the BP academic, I forget who it is this year for the BSA, on the drive, I have the survey with me, but obviously I can ask the BSA to send it over to you so you guys can like look at some certain things you want to look at.
Thank you. We'll now go to Councilor Draper.
This is a question for VP Larson. I want to just say happy Pride Month, everybody. It's June, so let's enjoy that. I was just curious if you're able to highlight any current policies or projects going on to help continue Pride Month and Pride activities into the year, as there are less students on campus or during June. So if there's any LGBTQ to us plus type of initiatives going on during the year, or any new policies that you'd like to put forward or just highlight.
Thank you. Vice President Larson.
Certainly. I'll give you a quick brief rundown. I agree. Happy Pride Month to everybody here. I know that last year there was a little bit of pushback on the Pride Week that was held and ended up being a university held event that residents and the global education program helped to throw that one on. But in terms of what we're planning this year, Pride related events, I had a meeting sit down with Katie Allen, who's our services manager, through the core management team, runs all of the service programs like through the landing and whatnot underneath there. And we're going to be helping partner with the landing to help them expand and look and see what they would like to do for advertising programming, because we trust them to know what's best for what they need for their students there. And it's a lot of a support role in terms of almost putting a megaphone to their voice and helping amplify that through there. In terms of actual policy writing and advocacy, a lot of that through my role in how we can work with that actually happens a lot to do with residents and residents' life and how that is effective in creating a warm and inclusive environment for everyone. So by far, we're always pushing for that to represent all of the students on our campus, especially seeing at the satisfaction levels of the LGBTQ2+ community coming out of residents was marginally lower than the other identifying genres of people out there. In terms of that, and through events, like we will still be looking to partner with Pride Week and helping them see that to full fruition. But if you'd like to further discuss Pride Week events and take that conversation offline, then definitely.
Thank you, Vice President Larson. And I'd just like to bring Council's attention to the time. It's currently 7:28, and we're scheduled to take our mandatory break at 7:30. So we can either have two options, in which we can take one more question and then continue question period after the break, or we can push the break until a little bit further and finish the first 15 question period.
Point of information, how many speakers are left, or how many questions are left on the list?
Five. I'll just do a show of quick placards in which we're going to take. Would you like to take, who would like to take the break on time at 7:30 and continue QP afterwards? I'm not even going to do the other vote. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll finish the first 15 minutes of QP, and then we'll see if we want to extend if we have any more, and then we'll do the rest of the extended question period after the break. Okay, I will resume time and go to Councillor Sunday.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the President. As Chair of the Executive Committee, I was just wondering, what exactly does the Executive Committee do?
President Babiar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So Executive Committee essentially is the organizational arm of Council. And so a lot of the things that we discuss in our committees are things that are in relation to the organizational structure, the organizational everyday goings-ons about the UASU. And we also talk about, let's say, platform priorities or portfolio priorities. So we see it as a huge discussion. A lot of executive committee, I would argue about 80% of it is actually based in discussion. And so if I were to bring a piece to executive committee regarding the international student tuition rates, we would spend time discussing it, going into depth about the processes, the way that we would vote about it, and getting feedback from each other. But executive committee essentially is the organizational arm of council. And so a lot of the work is regarding the organization, along with sitting with things like political matters, staff matters. And the best part about executive committee is that we spend a lot of time on personal announcements, because we get to spend 3 hours a week with each other only. And so we spend a little bit of time just being like, here's where we are with our lives, which is really important because it allows for us to meet with each other, I guess, in an informal way and develop. Definitely, as Mr. Speaker can also attest to, is probably the most fun part about executive committee. That might be a hot take, but essentially we discuss literally anything that the organization is dealing with will probably come to executive committee. I'm doing a terrible job of explaining this because it's pretty vague. So.
Thank you, President Mattergaard. We'll now move to, I'm going to shut your mic off. Councillor Bowes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So this question is for President Bhatnagar. So I was just going through the incoming international student tuition fees, and I don't know about the other faculties, but for Faculty of Engineering, the numbers don't add up, like, because as far as I have heard, the international tuitions were increased by 5%, I guess, but it shows, like, if I add those numbers up, even the highest ones, like, it shows an increase of, like, 10 to 20%. So could you please explain to that, like, how did they calculate these numbers?
Thank you, Councillor Bowes. On to President Vanguard.
Thank you for the question. And so the numbers don't add up because they essentially raise tuition outside of the 5% that the Board of Governors approved. And specifically for engineering students, you're correct in saying that the increase for 2020 is going to be 16% in international student tuition, which is why I'm very heavily against it. I've been very heavily vocally against it and will be voting no, because they calculated it off of a formula that I'm going to try to explain as fast as possible. But they're essentially saying they're taking in a U of A, a 2018-19 U of A student who was a domestic student. They're taking in what we call the Campus Alberta grant, how much the grant gives us, adjusting it for the health center because it doesn't actually apply to student education as per the documents that the government gives us. Taking what it costs to pay a full load equivalent student, so that means they're taking into account a student who takes 5 courses every semester, thinking about students who take in grants, and then they're assuming that you're taking 10 courses a semester a year, and adding those numbers together, they're getting the pricing for international students. And so they're essentially making international students pay for what their entire courses would cost, or their perceived understanding. And so the formula itself is pretty sound. However, the way that they apply the formula is where I have problems with. And so you're seeing every single faculty paying upwards of 5% more than they would have with this new model. And this is the model that's gonna be approved on, like, tomorrow. The rates are gonna be approved or disapproved regarding this rate. And so again, like, I've been very vocal in saying that the model is good because it provides predictability, but it's not good because it significantly forgets that international students are not cash cows at the University of Alberta.
And that concludes our first 15 minutes of question period. We have 3 more individuals on the speakers list. Would council like to extend? And we'll extend by another 15 minutes upon 5 placards. So I see 2. That looks like 5. All right, so we will extend by another 15 minutes once we return from our mandatory break, as discussed. So before we break, I will take midpoint attendance. President Batmanger.
Present.
Vice President Agarwal?
Hello.
Vice President Brown?
Here.
Vice President Staff?
Here.
Vice President Larson?
Here.
Governor Lay?
Here.
And I have decided to be gracious to Councillor McKenzie because of technical difficulties, so we're counting them because that's not their fault. Councillor Vargasalva? Councillor Beasley?
Here.
Councillor Chen?
Here.
Councillor Dixon? Councillor Draper?
Hey.
Councillor Isaac?
Here.
Councillor Ismail?
Yep.
Councillor Marinakis?
Yes.
Councillor Kidd?
Yeah.
Councillor C?
Here.
Councillor Ottawa?
Here.
Councillor Bowes?
Here.
Councillor Sunday?
Here.
Councillor Nugent? Councillor Nugent? Councillor Adouche?
Here.
Councillor Badesha?
Here.
Councillor Dillon?
Here.
Councillor Katera?
Here.
Councillor Jamaluddin?
Here.
Councillor McVeigh? Councillor Syed?
Here.
And I'm here, and the general manager is not. And we will return in 15 minutes at 7:50. Thank you. thank you, and thank you for coming out. We'll now start the next 15 minutes of question period, and I have the speakers list still saved from the last round. And next up is Councillor Chen. Please go ahead.
Thank you, everyone. I have seen executives went to great global conference, and I wonder as a councillor if we have chance to join the conference too. If the conference are inclusive enough for other people to take a part take part I understand a lot of global conference that get to bear.
Thank you, Councillor Chen. 30 seconds max for asking questions. Would you like to direct that question? Did you direct the question to an individual?
Oh yeah, I want to ask to President Benninger.
Okay, President Benninger, please go ahead.
Thank you for the question. Right now, the structure that we have does not allow for councillors to attend these conferences with us, as they're pretty portfolio specific. Although I actually would be very willing to invite councillors to things like public announcements of things, or I know last year we invited councillors to come to the Bill 19 announcement if they wanted to come along with us. But currently, as the model stands, we do not have any budgets for councillors to come to conferences with us. The only opportunity that I will that I can see might arise this year is the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations, a federal advocacy group, is looking at sponsoring Indigenous students to come out to a conference. The details of the program is very in the waters right now. We haven't fully decided what the goals are going to be, but we did contact the Indigenous student representatives as part of the Aboriginal Students Council. So right now, the answer simply is just no. There is no way for councillors to travel globally with the executive team because there's just no funding attached to that. But if you are very interested in a conference, you can let us know and we can try to help you find something.
Thank you, President Benninger. And when you pressed your button there, was that a response or did you want to add to the speakers list?
That was my response.
That was your response. Okay. We'll now move next to Vice President Agarwal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for Councillor Bose. I know last year you were on council as an engineering councillor, and you talked a lot about trying to get more engagement from engineering, the Faculty of Engineering. Given that there are a couple of vacancies this year, again, I'm just curious what if you've thought about that or if you're considering reaching out to the ESS.
Thank you, Vice President Wall. Now move to Councillor Bose.
Thank you for my
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you for my first question on council. So basically, I attend all the ESS board meetings, and starting from last meeting, so from now the councillors will be giving reports during the meetings, and I have told them to, like, there are three vacancies, and so far five people have approached me that they want to run, and other than that, like, I attend all the more or less all the events for engineering, and so far I just kind of advertised that, hey, there's a thing called SU and there's a thing called Students Council and I'm your counselor and there are still three seats left, so run in the fall by election. And other than that, I'm just gonna say it. So the engineering students do need your help, VP Agarwal, there's a scheduling problem right now, and I would love if you work with me to solve that. And yes, I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Information. Go ahead.
Can I address questions to two counselors? Because that was also for
Not necessarily in question period. Question period is meant to address two individuals of council. If you want to put your name down, speaker's list, and ask again, you can go ahead with that.
Sure.
We'll now move to councillors now.
My question is just for any member of the student groups committee. So I'm just wondering, I know like HS Mun has put in their proposal to become a student group about a month ago.
Why is that personal privilege? Don't use acronyms.
Oh, High School Model United Nations, thank you, President. So I'm just wondering when we can get or they can get back on, like, when they can officially become a student group. If there's any, like, information or detail they can get. because right now they're in the dark.
Thank you, Councilor Smale. I'll direct that to the chair of the student group committee, Councilor Sunday.
I apologize. May you please
yes.
Say it again?
Yeah.
The member was inquiring about the status of High School Model United Nations student group application to become a student group.
So currently the process remains the same in which they will apply to student group services. The student group committee only deals with things regarding specifically of a disciplinary nature in which a report is made and then forwarded to the student group committee. However, if you would like, I could reach out to student group services and inquire regarding their application. But again, it is completely within the purview of student group services and not students council or the student group committee.
Thank you, Councillor Sunday. We'll now move on to 31, Councillor Arisalva.
Yes, this is for President Bettinger. So earlier when we talked a little bit about the different conversations that people in CAUS have had about Indigenous initiatives, I was wondering what type of initiatives existing at other universities in Alberta might you know of that other universities have taken up within their communities, given that like ARC has existed for over 3 years, like there's been plenty of examples for them to go off of. If there are no initiatives or nothing that they've done, why hasn't that happened, given that like these conversations have been happening for so long? Yes.
Thank you, Councillor Arisalva. I'll now move to President Becker.
Thank you for the question. So in terms of what other schools are doing as part of CASA, the problem is every school is mandated through different provincial legislation. So we're mandated through the Post-Secondary Learning Act, which means our governance structures are very different. So a couple of examples I can provide is that some other schools may have an Indigenous counselor on their students' union. Some other schools have like Indigenous representation through the Aboriginal Students Council in the way that we do boards, like board committee things. And another example that I've heard of is simply people who run for the executive positions are Indigenous, and that has not been the case at our university. And so we've been moving our ARC recommendations around provincially and also federally just to get people to take them up. But I will defer the rest of my time to VP Brown if he has any other context that he might know of, because he has been here for longer than I have externally.
Vice President Brown, you have 1 minute.
Thank you, Speaker. I can speak. Yeah, I understand what President Bettinger said. There's a lot of different variations as to how student associations across the country are approaching reconciliation. I've seen different examples from like the University of Manitoba Students Union, where they do have an Indigenous representative on their council, all the way. I'm pretty sure that like the existence of a committee like ARC, UASU, is the first and only sort of thing of its kind across the country. We are, from what I've seen, and I've had a chance to circulate the ARC recommendations around some of my colleagues federally, we are one of the most sort of ahead in the game student associations when it comes to reconciliation. That's not to pat ourselves on the back, but that's just to show sort of what the national context is. The other thing is noting that like organizations like the Council of Liberty University Students or CASA, the Canadian Alliance Student Associations, don't impose any sort of requirements on members because of autonomy.
Thank you, Vice President Brown. To Vice President Agarwal.
It's the same question goes to Councillor Edwin. Yeah.
Councillor Edwin?
Yeah, thanks for the question. Something Dayton and I talked about a few months ago now, but kind of like we discussed, we reached out to the ESS, met up with them, kind of like talked about like a way to strengthen our relationship between our faculty association and council. I think the biggest thing that we decided on that we wanted to tackle was like apathy against the SU, like that runs prevalent within like students in engineering. It's natural, like everyone's busy, don't really care, and we're trying to change that narrative. I think that like the goal right now is like Omlin and I are just trying to like reach out to our friends, encourage people to apply to council and like show people kind of like what the student union does for them, kind of get people more engaged. That's like our goal. Obviously with only two people and a lot of vacancies, we can't really do that as effectively. So right now, hopefully like we're just talking about like campaigning, just letting our friends know hopefully building a strong team that we'd all work together and try to come up with some like a strategy for that, and especially working closely with the ESS and working together, because our relationship has been like a bit distant these past few years from what I've known. So we're just trying to make that happen, and it's that's the vision for this next year. Yeah.
Thank you. We'll now move to, I believe that's Councillor Bowes. Let's go ahead.
So this question is for President Bhatnagar again. So I was wondering, do you think we should have a separate seat or a committee for international students on council?
Will that be helpful?
Thank you. President Bhatnagar.
Thank you for the question. If councillors feel the need to create a committee regarding international students, that is your prerogative, and like as my boss says, I will support whatever initiatives it is that you want to do. But I will say, what would the value be for international students to come to Students Council as part of a committee? And there might be a lot of value that might not be. However, I would also say, perhaps there are ways that we can push for groups like the International Student Association to become a sustainable group year after year, so that we can give them representative status the way that we do with our faculty association. So they actually get derived authority from the students' union that we delegate to them. And we can do the same thing to international students. But however, there has been a lapse in their student group. So either way that council wants to take it, I would support you in whatever initiatives it is that you want to achieve your goals and help us achieve our goals collectively.
Point of information?
Yes.
I will just say, and I'm not, the question was not directed to me, but just as a point of information for everyone, there is an ARC recommendation in which it recommended the creation of a task force that delved into the structure of council and how different students and different student groups across campus are represented. So that may be something you might want to look into.
Thank you. I'm just going to clarify the use of, I was fine with that, but I'm just going to clarify a point. The use of point information is used to ask for information from another member, not necessarily to add in. If you'd like to add in along those lines, please put your name on the speaker's list.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Go ahead.
The last speaker, according to what the last speaker had told us, if you would like to ask a member for information, that is a request for information, not a point of information. Is that still the case or no?
I'm going by what's on the back of the placard because that's the information that's been given to everybody. So I will say that I will not follow what the last speaker has done because I'm going to go with what the information that's been provided to everybody is. Any other further questions or comments? Okay, we'll continue. I have next, and just once again, President Bhatnagar, was that you responding or was that you?
I was waiting for a question.
For a question, okay, so I lost where you're going to be on the list, so nobody lost. 31, Councillor Barty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So picking up on what Councillor Sunday brought up about the report about missing Indigenous women and girls, a lot of the conclusions that were put back are, a lot of the conclusions that come about is that the fact that there exists a large amount of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls points to an ongoing genocidal like history and actions that the Canadian state has taken. So in 2017, the Dalhousie Students' Union, based on these things and just the history of genocide and settler colonialism, decided not to celebrate Canada Day. So my question to President Bhatnagar is, does the University of Alberta Students' Union celebrate Canada Day? And if so, why are we continuing to do this?
Thank you, Councillor Vargas-Silva. President Bhatnagar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For your point, I 100% do agree that the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's report was 100% factual in stating that the atrocious actions that have been continuously placed on missing and murdered Indigenous women who are part of the youth community, who are part of the LGBT, LGBTQS2S+ community, this is a national genocide that we should be talking about. But to answer your question regarding does the Students' Union celebrate Canada Day, right now the University of Alberta Students' Union does not have any sort of programming for Canada Day, as we do allow students to decide their own celebrations regarding a celebration as such. The only sort of programming that we do offer is through the UASU Events Department, which are things like Campus Cup, Anti-Freeze, Week of Welcome, President's Address, Last Class Bash, and things like that. But as of right now, there is no official Students' Union Canada Day event.
Thank you, President Vandegaard. We'll now move on to Councillor Chan.
Thanks. I think communication is very important in Students' Union. I think I would like to meet more people in other university from Students' Union. Will the exec team interested in initiate a conference to welcome other members to share ideas together? Yeah, this is a question for VP Brown. Thanks.
Thank you. Vice President Brown?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch the question. Would you mind repeating it?
I want to ask if the executive team interested in initiate a conference to get people from Students' Union together. I mean, like people from different universities together to share their ideas in the conference.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So we do use our provincial and federal advocacy groups to do exactly that, where members come from various student unions and associations across the country, come together. We determine advocacy priorities that we go to government. One other thing that we do for the Council of Alberta University Students, which is our provincial advocacy group, is we do two or three times a year what's called a counterparts conference. So it's not just the president and vice president external that will go, but it will be the entire executive that will go and do develop, strategize, and meet with their counterparts at other student unions as well. And that does allow us to do a little bit more idea sharing for, you know, some operations. How do we do in terms of our clubs and those sorts of things compared to the University of Calgary, for example. So those sorts of opportunities do exist. However, I would love to see, and I do think this is something that might be worth examining, a little bit more, some more frequent gatherings of student associations, in particular in Alberta, with the fact that voluntary student unionism is a thing.
Thank you, Vice President Brown. That wraps our second 15 minutes of question period. I have two individuals on the speakers list. At this point, the way that we'll extend is that after that first five placards, the extensions are a two-thirds majority vote, and the amount of time can be specified by the member moving.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to remove myself from the speaking list.
We have one. We now have zero. I went quick.
There we go.
All right, with that, we'll continue on our agenda to board and committee business, in which we have one item special ordered. Maranaki's moves to ratify the executive compensation package as proposed by the 2018-19 Executive Compensation Review Committee. Would someone like to second this motion? I see Councillor Bose. Councillor Maranaki's, would you like to introduce your motion?
Sure.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Okay, so over the last 2 weeks, the Finance Committee has had the opportunity to take a look at the Executive Compensation Review Committee proposal to have some additions to the compensation package for the University of Alberta Students Union executives. The recommendation aims to reduce the financial barrier of becoming an executive by ensuring fair compensation. It was attached to the documents that you have in front of you today. But the five topics that were discussed, just to make this go away quicker, is a transportation allowance so that each executive should receive up to $100 a month for transportation-related costs based on expense forms. Cell phone allowance, each executive should receive up to $50 a month for cell phone related costs based off expense forms. Paid tuition, the UASU should pay for one class for each executive for each of the fall and winter terms. Number four, health and dental. The student care health and dental plan will be covered by the Students' Union for each executive. Number five, the final point, child care allowance. Child care support should be made available on an as-needed basis. And after much discussion and other research, we have made some minor edits and changes to the recommendations. It did take us 2 weeks to come up with these recommendations and changes, but to put into perspective, we talked about inclusivity of language in regards to the child care allowance. We had a bit of a discussion about the transportation and the cell phone allowance, and a lot of our research had to do with what other student unions are doing in terms of compensations, and what this does is really brings the executive members' compensations more into a par as to what other university students are doing. And we motion to ratify this. So that's it.
Thank you very much. I will now open the floor to debate on this motion, and we have some people on the speaker's list, starting with Councillor Bowes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So last year, I'm just going to say why ECRC was formed in the first place. So last year, the council felt that the execs weren't compensated, so council formed this committee. I was part of that committee, including Councillor Ledouche and Councillor C and former Councillor Rates. So what we did basically in ECRC, we compared the compensation our execs receive along with the 35 other schools in Canada. And what we noticed is that 30 of them received some kind of compensation. With that being said, the salary which our execs receive is still one of the highest among the other schools. But still, we felt that they weren't compensated enough in terms of benefits. So I was part of ECRC and Finance Committee, and I'm also part of this current Finance Committee. So if you have any question, I can speak to it and say what was the thought behind it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Bowes. Now I'll move to Councilor Ledouche. Please go ahead.
Right. So as Councilor Bowes said, I was on the committee originally went over the compensation changes. I am not going to be voting in favor because there's a few things in here that I feel like don't line up with our original discussion. For example, when it says under paid tuition, if USU should pay for one class for each executive in each of the following terms, it says if incomplete is achieved, but the execs still have to pay tuition, this would be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. This was not something we discussed in our executive compensation review committee, and I would like to see that a little more fleshed out. Because I wouldn't want someone to sign up for a class, drop it, and get paid for tuition. That probably won't happen, but I'm just saying I would like to see a bit more clarity in that case. As well as, there was something that was brought up by Councillor Sunday under 5, child care laws. It says for a child up to 18 years of age, I think that's kind of ridiculous, unless there's a child that has some sort of physical or mental disability. It doesn't make sense that you for childcare for a able-bodied 17-year-old. And that's, again, not something that we discussed in the original executive compensation review committee. So that's why I'm going to be voting in favor, just because I would like to see this report a little more fleshed out where it can get a little bit ambiguous. That's just my thing.
Thank you, Councillor Dush. We'll now move to Councillor Sunday.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I get my first comment in terms of optics, not necessarily something that will weigh my decision, but I will say it is a little interesting that in a report that is not supposed to, that in which an executive didn't vote, and is advocating for the increase of a salary, that it was forwarded by the Office of the Vice President, Operations and Finance. Optically, that may not look the best. Going on to on Councillor Fiducia's point, I did have thought it was a little weird that it was up to 18 years of age. One, and two, I think the $2,250 is nowhere near enough. I've asked some friends and colleagues of mine on Facebook because we had just received this. And they spend, upwards of $1,000 a month. And when discussing how it was based in part off the $25 a day daycare, if you actually look at it, those daycares are only for those ages, 0 to kindergarten. So a lot of you know, children will fall outside that, in which there are no $25 a day daycares. And in this, I know just from speaking with students in my own faculty, this is a huge barrier to being an executive, especially with all the travel and having to care for a child and things like this. So at least for me personally, I'd like to see this definitely drastically increased, because this $2,000, you know, you'd be lucky if that covered 2 months. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Sunday. We'll now move to Councillor Ismail, I believe. You're 52.
Point of information.
Point of information.
With the $2,225, is that not the starting amount, and there's availability to negotiate above that? I believe. Is that.
Is there a member that would like to speak to that? Is there a member that would like to speak to that? Vice President. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I won't be contributing too much to the discussion, obviously, for the conflict of interest, but to clarify this point, that is a minimum amount, and that was like the baseline amount, but as the package noted, management is more than able to increase that amount depending on the situation. For example, if that child has certain disabilities and needs additional care, that can be increased, but this was a baseline amount. Also, that up to 18 was an edit I had put in while we were in the discussion, and that was also to have some flexibility if there is also another situation where an executive had a dependent who was younger than 18 years old who had certain disabilities and could use that additional care. But that's perhaps something you can look into. I'm not sure if you can make before or just change lower the age, but that was another one, and that's why I put it there.
Thank you. And I'm going to have some homework on myself to try and figure out this whole point of information, request for information thing. I believe that was a good use of it, where it is something that a member has spoken to, you have a question on that piece of information, and then someone clarifies specifically on that piece. From my interpretation of Robert's rules, that's the correct usage of it. But Councillor Sunday brings up a good point about how in correct order you do the a little bit of additions. So I'll do my homework on that and bring it back to next council. But I believe that was a great demonstration of a point of information.
Point of information.
Go ahead.
I would just like to inquire, I guess, from the Vice President of Operations and Finance. So this baseline, any increase would be at the discretion of management, right? So they could choose either to increase it or not to increase it. So there's no guarantee, is what I'm saying, that they would. So I would just like to request and wondering.
There's no guarantee. We wanted a minimum amount to make sure something's available. Management is obviously not against the executive, and so probably because something that comes to the executive, and an amount would be approved by that year's executive, and probably the general manager and the manager of finance. I just think that only exists so that we can make sure that we have budget for it, and it doesn't look like the executive has to be deficit. But that's the discussion that happens at the committee, and an amount would be approved. You just have to explain why you need it. But there's definitely room for that, and I think management would be very much able to support
Thank you. We'll now move to, now I believe, Councillor Smith.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sort of discussion about this. I mean, I'm pretty new to this whole idea of going into committees and talking about it, but I think one of the most important things we should look at as councillors is independence. So what I saw is, like, having the executives as part of this executive compensation committee, I don't like that, just because we're the people who are supposed to be in charge of looking at their own compensation, and we're talking about how they're supposed to be in, how they're not going to be voting on it because of conflict of interest. But when I look at any other executive compensation for any big corporation or anything, the main thing is that the executives are actually not part of it at all, because they shouldn't be, because that I think is a direct conflict of interest. In terms of what we had of them editing, asking questions, I understand for me, like, I was part of this because I'm new, but I think going forward, when we look at the executive compensation, I think we should mandate this, that we don't allow them to have any say in this. They shouldn't even be put in the drive at all. I think what we're doing right now is as much as they should be able to do in terms of answering questions. We should have their own independent chair so that this can stay as independent as possible. And also just discussion for paying for classes. When it mentioned talking about paying for one of their classes each semester. Obviously, depending on what type of class you take from each faculty, those prices do change. So I would just want some more clarification, maybe inside there discussing how it'll work. I know we're talking about this equitable process, but I think it's still too vague. If they're taking two classes, one's $750, one's $500, how do we decide, right? Because maybe they're purposely taking $750 class that semester because it is getting paid by the SU rather than taking that $500 class because they would have to pay that for it out of pocket. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Snell. I'm also just looking at time here, and though we have three more items under general orders after this item, and I believe we will have item number four at 4:30 business. It's currently 8:30 p.m. We are legislated to finish at 9 p.m. Under modified rule debate, the speaker may limit debate any time anywhere of the day. I'm going to limit this debate to 8:40, at which point we will have a vote on this, whether we ratify or not. And then I move on to the rest.
Can I make a motion?
Yes, you can.
I would like to motion to return this to committee.
All right, I'll explain what that means. So what happens when a member moves to return an item to committee is that item does not necessarily get voted yes or no. What happens is that council votes to return, pretty self-explanatory, I guess, whatever to explain. Put it back to the committee, and then the committee will flesh it out more, make some changes, and send it back how they see fit. Is there a seconder for this motion? Councillor C. All right. Would you like to introduce your motion, Councillor Sunday?
Yes, please.
Go ahead. Whoops, wrong one. There you go.
So the point of this motion is not to say yes or no regarding this. I know a lot of work has been done on it. Rather, the point of this is just to return it to Finance Committee so that members of this council can go to Finance Committee, have a broader discussion, and as we are limited in time, I think it is prudent to have it go back to Finance Committee where we can all have the opportunity to have our say without such time constraints. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Sunday. Now, just for clarification, are you going to be returning it to Finance Committee or the committee in which it originated from, which is the Executive Compensation Review Committee?
Finance Committee?
All right, so the motion on the floor is to return this item to Finance Committee. I will now open debate to specifically this item. So debate is no longer on the topic of the business, but instead on the topic of returning it to committee. I have speakers list from the previous item in the system right now, and because we have two, I will make sure to track them separately. If you want to speak to this item, please place your placard up to return this committee. Okay. One. Anybody else? Okay. I will. Councillor Dixon.
Yeah. So I kind of like two things to talk about with returning it to committee. First of all, from my understanding, from what I've seen of it on finance, the last two meetings is we spent all of our meetings on it and did make some changes. But the thing is from what I understand, because it came from another, like, I don't know what they're called, special committee or whatever, we can't actually make like massive changes to it anyway, because these are the recommendations that special committee made. And now finance is only allowed to do certain small changes to it, like, for example, wording, but not able to do like big radical changes to it, which I get that some of the things in it are imperfect, and I would agree with that. However, I don't think that a lot of the concerns that people have that are being glaring are going to be addressed by returning it simply to finance. And I also think that this is a pretty pressing thing because right now people who work here don't have benefits. So it's kind of like, I don't know how effective it would be to return it to finance.
Thank you. Yeah, you're next.
Sweet. I just wanted to say, another main reason I think this should return to the committee is because we've heard from a member of the original compensation committee that there were things that were not discussed at meetings that were included in this report, which is, to me anyway, if members of the committee are saying that stuff was included that was not discussed at the committee level, I think it should be brought back, and that those items that were identified that weren't originally discussed should be discussed.
Thank you, Councillor Sunday. I will now move to Vice President Larson. Just a reminder, so I am going manual with this topic because of the fact that we have a speakers list in the first motion. So I'm going manual, adding the speakers list for the motion to move back to committee. So throw your placard up, I'll give you, we make the eye contact, and then I'll add you to the list. So next up, I have Vice President Larson. Please go ahead.
I'm just gonna pass on that. I got clarification. That's okay.
Okay, you passing?
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Councilor Bose.
Yeah, so one problem with this report is, like if we see it's from the, as Councilor Sunday was saying, that it's from the office of the Vice President, but it also has like the name tag of the current Finance Committee, and if we see the date which was provided, it's April 22 when this Finance Committee didn't even exist. So I think this whole report needs to be changed at first, and then it should be brought forward. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now go to Councillor C. And Councillor, I have you on the list for the original motion as well. Or did you, Councillor C?
Yeah, I canceled.
You canceled, so you don't want to be on the main one, but you are on this one?
Yeah.
Okay, please go ahead.
So I remember this is something that we did talk about in ECRC. This says here is a completed set of recommendations. The recommendations aims to reduce the financial barrier of becoming executive by ensuring fair compensation. So I know that like the execs right now, they have, for if they're a part-time student, government will make them, will start incurring interest on their student loan. So I wanted to ask if that has like repealed, because I heard that it was on the desk and it was like getting ready to be approved. So I wanted to ask about that, because that might be a good one to include on the ECRC report here.
Thank you. Next on the speaker's list.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Go ahead.
Am I able to respond to a question, or do I have to be added to the speaker's list?
Because we're in debate right now, you'll have to put your name down for debate, and then you can respond to questions within your debate times. Well, and I did just have you down. Is that, would you like to speak?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. President Benner, go ahead.
This is just a direct response to Councillor C's point regarding student interest. All student executives at the U of A who take a class are considered part-time students. So yes, we are, if you have student loans, we are incurring interest and we are paying our student loans back. And we're also taxed higher because we are making over the threshold. So we are, our salaries are taxed at a higher rate.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yep.
Are we discussing the motion to go back to council or the item itself?
Currently we're discussing the motion to return this report to Finance Committee specifically.
Okay.
Councilor C?
If we can't, if Finance Committee can't do anything about it, can we get like the current like ECRC people who are here to like fix it or not?
So currently this motion is to return to Finance Committee. If the original mover would look on a friendly amendment to move to ECRC, then we could do that. But the intention right now and what we've been debating is to put it to Finance Committee.
But for the original ECRC, their membership isn't here like now, wasn't it last council?
Yeah.
So we would be asking people who are no longer part of council to come back, which
so
they might not.
To clarify for myself then, so Johnny ECRC expired at the end of last term and there currently is not one that exists.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so Finance Committee is our only option by sound.
Which, point of parliamentary inquiry,
go ahead.
There's nothing in standing orders that says that Finance Committee cannot amend this report, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so although the report was done by ECRC, anything in this report could be amended by Finance Committee and brought forward again.
I don't see why not.
Thank you.
I'd say my one concern about moving back to Finance Committee is that there are two executives on the Finance Committee. In terms of the ECRC, whatever it was last year, there is no current exec on there. So moving it back to Finance, you really don't have that independence. So maybe we can have it so if it moves back to Finance, that those executives don't actually have a say or should comment on this issue.
Are these any inquiries or are these speaking points? I got you down on the speaker's point, Councillor Dixon.
Yeah.
Okay, next up is Councillor Smale. Next up is Councillor Dixon.
Okay, first of all, if we're allowed to change whatever we want in the report, cool, then it makes sense to put it back to Finance, I think, because there are things that I also would like to change, and I know Councillor Beasley, I'm kind of calling you up, but I think would like to change as well from our combos. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. Anyway,
they're literally asking for very basic benefits. They're not necessarily asking for things that are radical or going to be excruciatingly harmful. Also, from my experience in the last two meetings, they have been very good at simply guiding the conversation and not interjecting their thoughts, but rather being very accommodating for what we think. And in fact, it was the counselors who were driving for more benefits in comparison to the executives who were trying to remove themselves from the conversation. But if it's that big of a concern, maybe, I don't know if this is possible, maybe another counselor could chair the meeting rather than creating an entire new committee, but I don't agree that it's that big of an issue.
Thank you, Councilor Dixon.
Point of information.
Go ahead.
To the speaker. In this circumstance, if it was brought back to Finance Committee, the executives would have to abstain, correct? Because they'd have a conflict of interest in the vote?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
I agree with Councilor Kidd next.
Oh, yes. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. No, I don't know. Sorry.
No.
Cool.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to say regarding the membership of Finance Committee, if councillors feel like they don't want executives there, that is their prerogative, and they can go in camera and request that executives leave the room. But from my understanding, I hope that this is the understanding of all the executive committee, as we are sure it is, that we're only there to provide answer questions regarding context, so we can answer questions of like, how many hours do you work? What does it mean to do this? And the hope is that we are not, and in any shape, way, or form, providing any sort of recommendations. We're just allowing you to give, or we're giving you context. But if councillors feel the need to go in camera at Finance Committee, that is how they can do, and they can request that the executive don't come to in camera sessions.
Thank you.
Call to question.
We have a call to question. Let me quickly look up rules on that. So just to explain what a call to question is a member can call to question a motion at any point. And what that means is that the call goes immediately. I'm just going to look up what the rules are, unless anyone remembers off the top of their head. The rules
it's non-debatable. You have to lower it to 2/3 majority.
Is there a seconder?
I cannot. So.
Let's just do it.
No.
Let's do a seconder for fun. And all right, Councilor Kidd. So non-debatable, non-amendable, and we'll go to a vote.
Information.
We're voting on taking this back to.
Yes. So what has happened is we are debating taking this item. I'll use the item name, so that's the easiest. Let me bring it up here just so it's very clear. So we're debating bringing item 7A. We are debating 7A, and then a motion was put on the floor to take item 7A back to Finance Committee. We are then debating that, and then now there's been a call to question to take item 7A back to Finance Committee.
Point of information.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure if I'm following what exactly Council wanted to change about the original recommendation outside of the age point. I don't know if I've heard any specific points. I'm just curious.
Certainly. So in regards to that, I would advise you to check minutes and talk with councillors outside of that, and I would also advise councillors that have those specific questions and piece of information to direct those to Finance Committee, members of Finance Committee, or even better, come to Finance Committee and provide that as well, so that it's not on any single one of our memories to remember those points. But great point. Okay, we're going to vote on the call to question. So then what happens is if this vote is successful, then we will immediately vote afterwards on the motion to send it back to committee. We're starting now. So please vote. Closing the voting system in 3, 2, 1. Vote carries with 12 in favor, 3 abstentions, and 7 opposed. So we will now vote on the, we will now vote to send this back to committee.
So
no.
We
haven't
voted.
We
just voted that we should vote.
We just voted to vote.
Oh,
that is correct. All right. Is everyone clear on that? Was anyone misinformed in their vote? Would you like to review?
No.
I'm seeing no one saying. Okay. So now we will vote to send this item back to Finance Committee. Starting the voting system. Please vote. Everybody voted? Closing in 3, 2, 1. Item carries with 13 in favor, 6 abstentions, and 5 opposed. So that means that item 7A has been directed back to Finance Committee.
The call to question didn't carry with 2/3 majority. If it had 12 in favor, 3 abstentions, 7 opposed, that carries for 54.545.
Is it 2/3 majority?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah. All right, I'll double check in the book.
But if people are voting uninformed, should we not redo it then?
Point to parliamentary inquiry.
Oh,
we have to adjourn at 9, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm looking in the book. So y'all can keep doing points, but I'm not listening. Two-thirds, you're right. All right, so call the question, it did not pass. It was a 2/3 majority, and that was my error. Thank you for catching that. In the future, that's a great use of a challenge for chair. But that's fine, because you did it once, that's good.
Point of order?
Yes.
If people felt that they voted misinformed about what the vote was, should we not redo it?
To the call of questions?
I don't know
how to do that.
Yeah, I thought
you
said something.
Never mind then.
Okay. Jake, we're going to re-enter debate. I'll just remind you that it's 8:39 and I was intending to just vote on both of these items by 8:40 anyways. And within our standing orders is my prerogative to do that. So I'm going to extend that to 8:42 to allow like one more point within the sending back to committee. And then after that, we're going to vote on, if we don't vote on the right way, we're going to move forward and do the other one. Next up on the speakers list, I have Councillor Carter's all
up. I had two.
Okay. Yeah. And then I have Councillor Kidd.
Are we talking about sending it back to committee or the problems with the thing?
Committee.
No, I'm good then.
Okay. Councillor Smale?
I'm good.
All right, anyone else want to speak on sending this back to committee? Seeing none, all right, now we'll move to a vote to send it back to committee. And voting is open. So just to be 100% clear, because I do realize this is a confusing little ordeal for everybody, including myself, this is a vote to send it back to committee. Stopping in 3, 2, 1.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Go ahead.
The executive committee would like to have their objections known publicly. Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Point of information?
Yes.
What's the amount of majority that needs to pass?
For a vote? A simple vote?
Yeah.
Just
50, 50,
okay. 50 plus 1 because this is just on a motion.
Okay.
But good, keeping me accountable. Currently, so we have the vote carries with 13 in favor, 6 abstentions, and 5 opposed. I do not know how to show the abstentions on this map. Does anybody want to do that? Or would those people actually, no, let's do it this way. Those who abstain, who would like to have their abstentions noted, please raise your placards. And so can we have that noted for the minutes, please? Thank you, that's easy. All right. So now we are back once again to item 7A being that has now been moved to committee to finance committee and it will be discussed at the next finance committee. I encourage those who had, as Vice President Staff, brought to attention, if you do have pieces of information or feedback or things, please email that to an individual on the finance committee, or better yet, go to the finance committee and take part in the discussion. Thank you, and thank you for your patience in that confusing ordeal. We will now move on to what would you like to do? I would actually prefer if we do that at the next meeting. So just for an example, you're going for a nomination because we have just over 15 minutes left. Unless that's urgent pressing business, we worry special order we have, and we have a very short time for 2 big items. Apologies. All right, we're gonna move to general orders. Item 8A, first one being Batgar moves to discuss social media engagement. President Batgar, would you like to introduce your discussion topic?
Yes, I would like to introduce the motion.
Please go ahead.
So thank you, Mr. Speaker. As discussed by Councillor Beasley, Chair of Council Administration Committee, we discussed social media engagement today, and we have appointed Councillor Hadoosh as the primary person, quote unquote, for social media engagement. So Councillor Hadoosh is going to be helping us just quickly, time pending, discuss ways that councillors want to engage on social media. This is just a time for you to literally yell out any idea that you have. We cannot confirm that we will do them all, but conjointly working with the University of Alberta Students' Union social media coordinating team, we want to find a way that we can better engage the student body on issues of Students' Council, because as we saw, the Students' Council stuff that we posted on our main page got a lot of traction and shows that students obviously are looking for us to update them on the work that this council does. However, we're unable to do it right now because of the lack of engagement we have in our social media page. So this is literally your time to just say, if you have any wild idea regarding social media, just yell it out and Councillor Hadoosh will write it down. And we cannot promise that we'll get things done, but we will get a lot of things done, just not all of your wild ideas.
I would like if people not yell them out. So press the buttons, please. I'm going to keep speaking turns at 30 seconds for this, for ideas. And then we're going to move on to the next one at 8:48, if we're going to do rapid-fire ideas. So get your rapid-fire ideas ready. Okay, 37, which is Councillor Hughes, please go.
Oh, no, I didn't do that.
Okay. Next is Councillor Chen.
Okay. So we have seen a lot of social media construct how we see the reality. I wonder if we could ratify those comments and summary in the council. That will be good. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Chen. We'll now move to, I believe that's Councillor Dixon.
So I can just say ideas, right?
Yep.
So for like Instagram, I don't even know if I follow the Instagram page or if there is one. But one thing that I know like people really like is like contests. Like even if it's not, even if you don't get a big prize, like people really like that kind of stuff. According to my younger brother and people who are graduating this year, nobody likes anything but Snapchat now. Snapchat stuff might be good for
seniors.
Kids these days.
There we go.
Thank you. President Menner.
A suggestion that we talked about at Council Administration Committee was like doing profiles of counselors that are outside of your portfolio, like outside of your goals. Like no one wants to talk to you like solely because you care about academic advising. They want to talk to you because you're a human that they can relate to. So just doing really cool like counselor profiles. And FYI, every counselor gets a free headshot and sub photo. So if you go and take your headshot, that's a photo, we could use those headshots to do some cool graphics.
Thank you, President Buttergar. Now on to Councillor Slade, I believe. Go ahead.
So in terms of like the social media pages, I just like I've noticed that there's a lot of different ones for different branches of the SU, which makes sense to a certain degree, but some of those pages are like kind of ridiculous. Like there's so many, like I don't know how many there are for everything. Like the elections page only has it less than 100 followers, I believe. And so like a lot of like maybe consolidating those resources. Also, if you do like any sponsored posts on Instagram or stuff, if, I don't know if it's possible like coordinate with the actual university ads as well.
Thank you, Councillor Said. We'll move on to the next. Vice President Brown.
So a few things. One, I would recommend to Councillor Hadoosh that she reaches out to our social media coordinators that are on. Just kidding. No, thanks. Second one, just relating to what was just said, that's part of a big restructuring our marketing department is trying to do, is sort of a consolidation of social media points, which is definitely a weakness that we pointed out when we got in the job. We were like, this is way too much for students. That's part of the reason why we've consolidated what used to be 5 individual SU exec pages into 1.
Thank you, Vice President Brown.
Okay, I'll come back.
Now move on to Councillor Draper.
Shameless self-plug incoming. I know there might be some counselors who have a political podcast, or might be some sort of podcast that students have, so it might be beneficial for counselors or executives to maybe get involved in that type of independently ran student information stuff, like a possible podcast that I might be on.
Point of information.
Thank you. Yes.
From Councillor, I believe it's Draper.
Yes.
What is the name of this podcast?
Go ahead.
The this the podcast is called Cheap Dues and Cheap Brews and Student Dues. It is about politics, how it impacts students, as well as we review cheap beer.
Because it was 8:47, I will allow two people off the current speakers list, and those who I don't get to, please email your thoughts to President Bettinger. Next up is President Bettinger. I'm just going to X you so you can tell yourself your own thoughts.
But yes, a point of, it's not email me, it's email her.
Okay.
So I don't know how to make that.
Email your thoughts to Councillor Douche, please. Next up is Councillor Margarzalva. Please go ahead. You're second last.
Yeah, I was just going to motion to table this.
I'm not going to hear that because one more 30 seconds. Next up, Councillor Chen, and we'll be done.
Sorry, is that this question for the social media?
Yep.
I want to discuss that, we should consider the audience. What the audience wants to know from the students' union, if the summary really something that our audience really interesting, I really want to read. So, I would like to have more people to...
Thank you, Councillor Chen. We limited it to 30 seconds for those apologies. Please, anyone has any additional thoughts, send these to Councillor Hughes for the consideration. All right, that concludes item 8A. So we are currently sitting at 8:50, and we have two items left in general orders. We have Matt Yard moving to create a student union building capital plan task force, and a motion to go in camera. Would council like to extend, or would we like to move through these in 2 5-minute increments?
No.
I'll give a chance to extend now, or else it'll be 2 5-minute increments. President Bettinger?
To a motion to suspend standing orders to until 9:15.
I'll look for a seconder. Councilor Bowes? We will just call this to go. Suspend standing orders. No debate, hold on a minute, we'll do a vote. Does anyone know if it's two-thirds?
No.
Alright, so right now we are moving to suspend standing orders to extend council to 9:15 to discuss the last two items on the agenda. Opening it now. Closing voting in 3, 2, 1. Carry. We have 23 in favor, 1 abstention, and 9 opposed, which works out to 56%.
Just about.
So we will now have 2 5-minute increments to talk these. We will now have 2 5-minute increments to talk these. Alright, so I'll now move to item 9B. Vanguard moves to create a students' union building capital plan task force. I'll look for a seconder on this motion. Vice President Larson, President Vanguard, would you like to open? Introduce your motion.
I'm sorry we don't have more time for this, but this is an extremely pertinent issue to this council, so I'm quite disappointed that we don't have time to discuss a really time-sensitive issue, but it is what it is. I'm looking to create a Students' Union Building Capital Plan Task Force. As of the last meeting, we discussed a lot of ideas regarding deferred maintenance in our building, and I know that we love long meetings, don't we all? But I think it'd be great if the task force is able to come together and include actually student at large, so the students that we don't necessarily interact with at this level, talk about what it is that we need from the building, and do we want to stay with the building? Do we even want to go to referendum? What are our options regarding the feasibility of our building? And I guess bring recommendations forward to council. So I had some stuff to show y'all, which are things regarding the restoration of the Meyer Horowitz Theater. We have a folder with about 15 documents ready to go to share with the task force regarding research. And we also have a couple of things that we're not gonna have time, but we have to go in camera to look at some of these revitalization projects. So I guess we could table this portion to talk at the task force if council wants to create a task force. And if you do, then I would love to just get 4 councillors from council to sit on this committee, and then we can do a search for the rest of our membership, which I hope is going to include university admin, students at large, and a couple of students' union staff members, and two members of the executive committee.
Thank you, President Bettinger. I'm going to go back on what I said earlier and instead go forward with just allowing this motion to go forward, and if we hit time, then the way it's defined is that it will then move on to the next agenda so that we don't just, we're not forced to vote on something in which you only have 9 minutes to talk. Go ahead.
I have a minor inquiry.
Yes.
Sorry, this is the wrong one. Can you kind of repeat the results for the previous vote?
Yes, previous vote was 13 in favor, 1 abstention, and 9 opposed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Point of information.
Yes.
Sorry, this is actually a point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yeah.
Could you speak to the process of if a vote has failed at council, which side has to re-propose the motion? Because according to Robert's Rules of Order, the side that won this vote is able to re-propose. So the side, people who voted no, can re-propose the motion to go to extend for like 10 more minutes so that we can talk about this issue.
Is
that not a thing?
I believe that that is how the process works, and that's the way that I've had it happen in the past. That if a motion fails, the winner of a motion can move again, but not the one who moved it before. So I can be voted here. So what we'll do is we'll continue discussion on this motion. Right now I have Councillor Sunday.
I just have a question. We're moving just to approve whether or not we even want to do this. This isn't like, oh, we're approving the standing orders or whoever's going to stand on it. Okay.
Correct. Very similar to last meeting's discussion about creating a sustainability task force. So, only 3 minutes. Councillor Bowes?
Yeah. I mean, I just want to speak for 1 minute. Like, I think it's a great idea, and if it happens, I would love to sit on this committee. That's it.
Thank you. Is there any other debate on this motion? Seeing none, I will then bring this to a vote. And just a reminder, I'll read the motion out again. Bettinger, and I believe that was Bettinger, seconded by Bowes, moves to create a Students' Union Building Sub-Capital Plan Task Force. Did I get the seconding right? Was that move yourself? Perfect. So that's what we're going on. So simply to create this task force. Seeing no other ones, I will then start the voting system. Please vote. Closing in 3, 2, 1. This motion carries unanimously.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Go ahead.
If we move to go in camera, technically, no matter what, we have to move to go ex camera. So what if we move in camera and we just don't vote to move ex camera?
The meeting will still adjourn at 9. So when we, I don't even know how that would work. But the way I would see it is we move in camera, and then the meeting, we hit 9 o'clock, then meeting just ends. So if we go ex camera, meeting ends, it's all done. Because that's what the way it says in bylaws, it's pretty clear, this meeting is done at 9. So I see that as everything ended.
Yeah,
a good point. Okay, so next we have Bettinger moves to go in camera. Do I have a seconder for this? Vice President Staff? Moving to motion to move in camera is not available, not amendable, and simple majority.
Yes.
Let's do it. Okay, we'll go ahead and open the voting system. Closing voting in 3, 2, 1. This motion passes, 18 in favor and 1 opposed. We are now in camera, so I would ask all guests of Students' Council or members, individuals that are not members of Students' Council to leave the room.